Well, good evening, everyone. We're going to call our city council meeting to order. We're going to begin with a Pledge of Allegiance led by Mayor Pro Tem Fonzie. Thank you. Well, let's go ahead with a roll call, please.
Councilmember Bourbeau?
Here.
Councilmember Moreno?
Here.
Councilmember Sturdivant?
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Fonzie?
Here.
Mayor O'Malley?
Here.
All present.
Thank you. First item, approval of the agenda. And this includes a waiving of reading of full of ordinances appearing on the agenda, and the titles of the ordinances will be read aloud by the city clerk at the first reading after the motion and before a city council votes, if applicable. We have a motion to approve the agenda.
Move for approval of agenda.
I'll second.
We have a motion by Councilman Sturdivant, seconded by Councilmember Bourbeau. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Sturdivant?
Yes.
Councilmember Bourbeau?
Yes.
Councilmember Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Mayor Pro Tem Fonzie?
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley?
Yes.
5-0, motion passes.
Thank you. Well, it is our privilege tonight to begin with a presentation recognizing Barbie Boots with the award she received from the state of California regarding the champion of the community. And I've got some stuff to read on this, Barbie. So my fellow alumni from UCSB a year or two ago. I will speak louder. Can you hear me? Is that good? Oh, you're pretending. I get it. Okay. We are very pleased to recognize Barbie Boots, who was recently recognized by the California Parks and Recreation Society as their statewide champion of the community for 2017. The Champion of the Community Award honors people who have made, quote, significant efforts to improve the quality of their community through parks and recreation, and recognizes the contributions of those who volunteer and provide support and services in their community that furthers the mission and quality delivery of park and recreation services, programs, and facilities in their community. Through the years, Barbie has been and continues to be a dynamic and energetic force for good causes. Barbie has a very long history of service in numerous capacities, which includes her service on the city's Parks and Recreation Commission beginning back in 1992, just right after she got out of high school, where she served as a very active commissioner continuously for over 22 years. Through her service as a commissioner and as founder of the Atascadero Recreation Center Committee, Barbie played a key role from beginning to end in the planning and development of our Colony Park Community Center, which opened in 2007. In addition, Barbie helped with the fundraising efforts to help modernize the furnishings at the Pavilion on the Lake. She has also served as chairperson of the Atascadero Lakeside Wine Festival Committee, which directly supports renovation of the Charles Paddock Zoo, as well as providing donations to many other charitable nonprofit groups in the community. Barbie has served on the boards of the Chamber of Commerce, the Youth Task Force, the Prunery Foundation, the Colony Days Committee, and I know she was a founding member with the Performing Arts Center Committee. Just to name a few. She also has served on the boards of countywide agencies such as CASA and the Assistance League, through which she helped to develop Operation School Bell. Barbie was the driving force behind the Coats for Kids program of SLO County, which distributes new and used coats and sweaters to those in need each year. Barbie has lived in Atascadero for over 30 years. Congratulations, Barbie, on your Champion of the Community Award. Please join me in a standing ovation for Barbie Boots.
almost wish you hadn't read all that, because now I'm exhausted. But that goes back quite a ways, so thank you, Tom, and thank you, all of you. I do appreciate this. I'm going to read this to you very quickly. I was going to ad lib it, but today I thought, I think for the sake of time, I'm going to read this to you. It's like a letter to you, so if you want to close your eyes and think that you're reading it yourself, that will be a good idea. The last time I was at the podium, I told you that John and I were going to Long Beach to attend the California Parks and Recreation Society Awards Banquet. I also told you that I would return and tell you all about it and show you my award. Well, tonight's the night, and I have returned. I remember somebody else saying that, somebody in Sacramento. He was a big dude. On Friday, we arrived in Long Beach at the Hyatt Regency Hotel, where Terry Banish, our deputy city manager, outreach, promotions, and events, had reserved a harbor view room for us. And that was a beautiful room, by the way, Terry. That was a good idea. We could see the Queen Mary and huge yachts taking off for their parties. A little envious of that, of course. The banquet was held in the ballroom of the hotel, and we were met by our own Jennifer Fanning, Colony Park Community Center Director and Recreation Supervisor, and Larice Lopez, Recreation Coordinator at the Community Center. I have to add to that, my sister-in-law was able to go with us, and we picked her up in Santa Barbara, and she also is a graduate of UCSB. So we had lots to talk about, Tom. Jennifer presented me with a beautiful bouquet, and I see that I'm holding it right there in that picture, and you can tell how beautiful it was. And I've been keeping it fresh by changing the water every day, so it's still with me. After the girls introduced us to the hotel, and we had a little libation with all the rest of the conference people who were having a good time, we went into the banquet, and there were several awards presented that night, and it was my honor to be included in what Tom has mentioned, the champion of the community category. I remember when Tom called me from Sacramento, and he was so excited, and I thought, oh my gosh, what's happening? And he said, you've been nominated and selected for this award. I think because it meant that Atascadero was going to be represented at the state conference, that must have been why you were so excited. Yeah. Had nothing to do with me, but Atascadero was up there on the screen. When I wrote my column last week, I added some of the details of the banquet and the awards, but of course, for the sake of time, read my column. You can get a free one at the chamber if you missed it on Friday. But there was another recipient from our area, and that was Dr. Marnie Goldenberg, PhD, who was recognized with the Outstanding Research Award. She's assistant professor in the Recreation, Parks, and Tourism Administration program at Cal Poly San Luis Obispo. So it was really nice that, and I did have a chance to meet her. She's somebody that Jennifer knows very well, and I got in on a little conversation with the two of them, and a remarkable young woman. I say young because she is a whole lot younger than I am. So that was nice to think that San Luis Obispo and Atascadero We're all part of those, you know, all those communities in this state. You've all heard about them, Northern California, Southern California. But it was really nice to be there and be part of that and represent the Central Coast. It's an honor to have been taken. It's an honor to have taken part in the growth of Atascadero in the Parks and Recreation area. I love Atascadero and will continue to work on projects that will enhance this beautiful city. And John and I have donated a flag, just so you know, in front of the printery. So when you look over there, see that flag flying, we're working on a light so that we can have the flag up all the time. But when you look at the printery, which is now my next project, you will see that the building looks alive. It really does, because that flag is flying out there. It says we're open for business. So here is my award, and don't get mad at me because, whoo, boy, this would knock you out. But these are really interesting awards, and I sort of think it represents in design coast, mountains. I think they did an interesting job of creating the award. So anyway, thank you again, guys. We had a good time. Thank you. Okay.
Well, Barbie, your work's not done yet because your good friend Terry Banish wants to get a picture of you with us. So we're going to take a minute. We'll join you in front here. Thank you all for helping us celebrate this occasion with Miss Barbie Boots. Next item on the agenda is the consent calendar. Items considered to be routine in nature that can be dispensed with without a lot of presentation on detail. However, if there's any council member or a member of the community that wants to pull an item for further discussion, we can do that. Now, I understand there is an item on the agenda that community members have some concern about and would like to speak. But first, let me check with council. Any member of council wishing to pull an item? And I think I overheard there's some interest in considering Consent calendar item A4, is that true? Or is there anyone in the audience wishing to speak on that item? Any member of the public wishing to pull any consent calendar item for discussion? And let me read them because I thought I heard some concerns. So let me make sure you understand what's on the agenda. That's the City Council draft action minutes of March 13th, February 2018 accounts payable. Number three is temporary road closure, Hot El Camino cruise nights and colony days. Item four is parcel map AT-17-009 dealing with 8390 Kerberl Avenue. And then I believe that is it. So is there any member of the public wishing to comment on one of those items? If you do, we need to pull it from the agenda now. Otherwise, we're going to vote on all of these items together, and we won't talk about them anymore tonight. So we clear on that? No discussion on any of those items. So I may have misheard. There's another item. People may be coming up during public comment. Then, with that, we could entertain a motion on the consent calendar.
I move approval of the consent calendar.
Second.
We have a motion by Mayor Pro Tem Fonzie, seconded by Councilmember Sturdivant. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Sturdivant?
Yes.
Councilmember Bobo?
Yes.
Councilmember Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Mayor Pro Tem Fonzie?
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley?
Yes.
Motion passes 5-0.
Thank you. Next item on the agenda is updates from the city manager.
Thank you, Mayor, and I'll have David bring up my PowerPoint, but wanted to start off talking about the big storm that we had last week. I know all of us were hoping to get a lot of rain. I just don't think we hope to see it all quite in the short period that we did. So the total rainfall for last week's two-day storm averaged in the 6 to 8 inch range for most of Atascadero officially. I know that there are some people around town who have said that they received more than that. But for the most part, it was 6 to 8 inches. The heaviest rainfall occurred between 4 and 6 a.m. on Thursday morning, and that caused all of our creeks and drainage ways to surge. Overall, the preemptive work staff had completed, checking and clearing our stormwater facilities, allowed for only minor localized roadway flooding. There were a few locations where storm pipes became plugged with debris, such as tree branches, limbs, and sediment, which caused some damage to roadways and driveways. We had several large trees that fell or lost limbs, resulting in temporary power outages and blocked roads, but these situations were not nearly as numerous as we expected, especially considering the heavy amount of rain that we saw in a very short period of time. It was pretty amazing driving around Thursday morning, looking at places like Atascadero Creek, and other drainage ways where, again, there was just a lot of water in a very short period of time. The good news is that Atascadero Creek is flowing very well, and the creek pipeline is flowing again into the lake. We do usually typically close that during heavy periods of or the first heavy rains of the year because it's there's a lot of mud and sediment in the water, and we don't want that getting in the pipeline, plugging up the pipeline. But as soon as it's flowing clear, we open that back up. And our own Atascadero fire captain, Matt Miranda, made the news too, performing swift water rescue work from the Salinas River in Paso Robles. So that is Matt there rescuing a person that was stranded up there. So we did helped out Paso, and thanks to Matt and the fire crews that helped out up there. We're going to talk about the chipping program. So the Slow Fire Safe Council has awarded grant funding to our fire department for a 2018 hazardous fuel reduction chipping program. This is a program that we've received grant funding for in the past, and is very popular. The chipping program is offered to properties in the high and very high severity zones located on the west side of the city. The registration deadline for the chipping program ends on March 31st. So if you want to get stuff chipped, I need you to register by March 31st, which is coming up quickly. Anyone who lives in the high fire severity zone and is interested should register online right away at atascadero.org. /chipping, or you can email the program coordinator at chippingprogram@atascadero.org. Shipping will begin on April 16th, so even if you're not ready, if you want to have your stuff chipped, sign up now. You have until April 16th to get it out to the road. Please sure to stack branches with the ends all facing the same direction. Branch diameter can be up to 5 inches around with lengths not to exceed 15 feet. Please keep your chipping stacks free of trash, processed lumber, poison oak, and vine-type vegetation. The vine-type vegetation in particular will jam the chipper and severely shortens how long we can have our chipping program going. So please limit it to branches and other things. These pictures that you see up here show both the correct and incorrect manner of stacking materials for chipping. And as a reminder, the weed abatement deadline is June 1st. A lot of us on the west side have a lot of what I call coyote brush in those. This is great for the chipping program. You can, with the wet soil especially, it's fairly easy to pull it out. Those dead and dying coyote brush, stack it up here, and they'll take care of it all for you. This is a very good program. Speaking of good programs, we had the Central Coast Craft Beer Festival. This festival is the official kickoff to the Central Coast Beer Week that runs through April 1st. The weekend event kicked off last Friday evening right here in the Upper Rotunda with a Brewers VIP reception and 140 industry attendees. I was able to peek up here for a short period, and it looked like everybody was having a good time and in awe of our wonderful city hall here, so that's nice. Then the Craft Beer Fest for the public was held in the Sunken Gardens on Saturday and was a sold-out event. There were 1,200 tickets sold and a total of 1,400 people at the event, including vendors and volunteers. They had over 40 breweries, 6 wineries, 4 cideries, plus a lot of delicious food and live music. And the Central Coast Craft Beer Fest benefits local charities and the Central Coast Brewers Guild, whose mission is to increase awareness about the Central Coast's influence on local craft beer. A very successful first event, and we look forward to having them back next year. We also had the Tent City Marathon. This event, which was put on by the Atascadero Printery Foundation, was held on Sunday. This was the first time for Atascadero to have a marathon, a half marathon, and there was also a 10K, a 5K, and a non-run, or a non-run. It was very well attended with over 500 runners coming in from all across California. The event ended with a presentation of awards to all of the first place runners, and all proceeds from the event benefit the Printery Foundation. They're already looking to schedule the second annual Tent City Marathon for 2019, and the Atascadero Tourism Business Improvement District and the City of Atascadero co-sponsored both events. It is spring at the zoo. So the Spring Festival at the Charles Paddock Zoo continues now through April 8th. It is included with your general admission. Our zoo hours will be extended by an hour, and the zoo will be open from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. throughout the summer. This year, the Spring Festival was delayed by a couple of days due to the heavy rain we had last week. We didn't want to have the chicks and babies out and people tramping through the dirt and mud to get there, but they are out and enjoying their digs. The festival features backyard babies, including baby chicks. The Bug Zone are 2 new recently born babies, which is a baby red-flanked duiker and a baby prehensile tail porcupine. You can see pictures of them. They're a little hard to see over there on the left. The porcupine is absolutely adorable. They are covered in red fur when they are born. They don't have their quills for a few weeks. They change very rapidly. So come on out and try and catch a glimpse of both of our babies before they grow up. And we have an anniversary coming. So the North County Farmers Market in the Sunken Garden celebrates its first year anniversary next Wednesday, April 4th, from 3 to 6. So it's hard to believe they've only been here a year. We've certainly enjoyed having them here in the Sunken Gardens and being a part of our downtown. April 4th will also be the first Farmers Market Community Day of the year. There will be a free bounce house provided by Hop's Bounce House and live music by Ricky Montillo. Nonprofits, event planners, and local businesses are welcome to come set up a table and a couple of chairs to promote their events or products. Farmers Market is every Wednesday from 3 to 6 here at the Sunken Gardens. Please support our farmers. We certainly enjoy having them there. They have a lot of very incredible products, fun products, in addition to the fresh fruits and vegetables that we all enjoy. So please come on out and support our farmers market here in town. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Any questions? Let's go ahead with Mayor Pro Tem Fonzie, followed by Councilwoman Moreno.
Rochelle, just a quick question about the chipping program. You said it was for the west side only, not the east side. Could we get some clarification on what qualifies?
I believe that the west side high and severe severity zones have first priority. I know in the past to go ahead and call and let them know if you're not in those zones. And if they have enough available man hours, they will go ahead and hit those east side. So go ahead and try and register if you're on the east side. But the west side, those high severity, fire severity zones, do get first priority. Is that correct?
Rochelle, you had said that we're waiting for the sediment to die down in the creeks to open up the pipeline. Has that already been done, or is it still sort of?
Yes. As soon as it was running clear, we immediately opened it up.
Thank you.
Maybe you could elaborate on the cryptic answer you gave to the question, so everyone in the public and on TV knows what we're talking about.
So there is a lake fill line that runs from Atascadero Creek, right there near the Alps Three Bridges Trail, a little bit, I guess that's west of there, on the creek, and it runs all the way into Atascadero Lake and comes in by the dam. This helps fill our lake every year and circulate the water throughout the lake whenever the creek is running. The creek has to reach a certain level, obviously, for that water to be able to go through the pipe and do that. We do have the ability to close the valve so there's no water running through that pipe to our Atascadero Lake, or open the valve, which we do based on the water quality and the level of the creek. So as soon as the creek is running, we like to open that up and start getting water in our lake and getting fresh water to help fill the lake and to help with the lake water quality. But we want to make sure that we don't have a lot of dirt and debris and other things in that water for a couple of reasons. First of all, if it makes it all the way to the lake, all of that lands in our lake. We don't want to put that muddy water in the lake. And then the second, more important, is that that tends to settle into the bottom of the pipe and will fill up the pipe so that it doesn't work. So we have opened that valve again. There is water flowing from Atascadero Creek into Atascadero Lake right now.
And I believe that's about an 8-inch line. It's or even 10. Maybe it's larger, but pretty good size.
I think it varies in place to place. It's an older line, and so depending on when it was put in, it's a little bit different size here and there.
Another good idea by E.G. Lewis, because that's gravity-fed all the way down, and as opposed to, I think we got an estimate one time, if we had to fill the lake, as people suggested we do during the drought, by pumping water in, it was about a $500,000 project. So this water flows in gravity-fed for free, pretty nice for our community, and we work closely with the Department of Fish and Game and other organizations that are very concerned about any environmental issues in the creeks and taking care of the fish, that they have adequate water. So it's kind of a combination of effort, but it's win-win for our community. So thank you for that. Councilmember Burbeau.
Yes, thank you. Following up on that, at the rate at which it's flowing, is that going to potentially fill the lake, or is it just going to bring it to just going to help out?
I think it really depends on Mother Nature and how long we can keep that creek flowing. Nick, do you have anything you can add to that?
Assuming we don't get a lot more rain at the current rate, is it going to, how full is it going to get?
The lake right now is, or before the last rain, before this past week, it was down about 6 feet below the overflow spillways. So, you know, I would expect, you know, if we can, it all depends on how high the creek water level is. So the higher it gets, the more head pressure pushes the water into the pipe. But, you know, if we get that flowing for maybe 3-4 weeks, I would think it would fill up again.
Thank you.
Thank you. Other council questions? Seeing none, we will move on then to the next item on the agenda is community forum. We really have a fairly short agenda tonight. The council has a few announcements later. The main item on the agenda under public hearings is a tree ordinance update, which will take some time, but it won't take a long time. But I do think there's a number of folks here for the community forum, which is an opportunity for all of you to speak to us on any topic that's not on the agenda, but it's under our jurisdiction. And what I'd like to do, since there's so many here that may be for a lot of different topics, we are going to make sure everybody gets to talk about anything they want. However, I'd like to get a little bit of an idea of what the topics are and how many would like to speak on each one, and that'll help us plan a little bit. So I think there's some folks here on styrofoam. How many folks are here? And I think even though we heard about the, oh yes, and we have a piece of styrofoam too. That, I understand, it's unfortunate we didn't hear about it sooner because we would like to accommodate a more of a presentation. And I've got some ideas of how we might handle that a little bit later. But if you just raise your hand if you have another topic other than styrofoam. And let's see, one of them has to do with animals, and one has to do with like a residential area, a problem or a project in a residential area. Is that correct? So I think there's kind of three basic topics. I think the styrofoam one could take the most time, and well, I've got a suggestion for you. You get to decide, but my suggestion would is we hold off on the styrofoam discussion until after the tree ordinance, because when we get into council announcements, I will be talking about a similar discussion that we had at the Integrated Waste Management Authority. I'm a past chairperson. I'm currently the vice chairperson. And Supervisor Gibson and I made a recommendation at the IWMA to hear this topic, and I'm going to be talking about that'll be a time I can talk about what our council would like to do. Normally, we can't talk about any actions that we can take during public comment. But if I think the city attorney might give me a little more leeway, if we could have that discussion around a topic that is on the agenda under IWMA, and I would be able to entertain public comment at that time and even go a little bit longer than we might be able to during public comment. So is that agreeable? Is there anyone representing here from styrofoam that, no, I don't want to do that, I want to do it right now, I will respect that. But if everybody says, let's wait, we'll take some time and do a little bit more, and we can talk, we can give you some feedback of what we think we can do in an action on that. Okay, so anybody object to that plan? Okay, I think we got a plan then. So let's go ahead with public comment, the community forum, on anything that's not on the agenda, but we're going to call styrofoam is now kind of on the agenda because I've said we're going to talk about it a little bit later. And let's just keep moving here. Mr. City Attorney, I think I can kind of walk the line, but do you have some suggestions for me?
Well, I just want to say where that line is.
Yes.
So as you know, if the matter is not on the agenda, then it cannot become a topic of discussion.
Yes.
You are entitled to provide during council reports a brief statement as to your activities, including, you know, the meetings you've attended and a brief statement of what was discussed at those meetings. However, there would not be an opportunity for discussion, if you will, by other council members.
Yes.
About the item. I'm just cautioning that if you did want to have a discussion to include questions from council, comments from council, and of that nature, that it would have to be put onto a future agenda for that purpose.
I understand that. My intention is to actually, on the agenda item called Integrated Waste Management Authority, I will report the discussion at that public meeting, and I will just be repeating stuff that's been reported there. I have a recommendation I was going to give to council out of that, and I think either the council would simply not object to my recommendation, or they'd say, well, let's put it on the agenda and talk about it more at a later time. That's as far as I see the council going. Does that seem acceptable?
Well, as long as the council's not taking action on what it is
right.
that you're going to describe happened at that meeting.
Yeah.
Yes.
And then I would also like to basically allow public comment on the topic of styrofoam under that part. We simply take the public comment that would occur at this time and kind of have it then. Was that okay? Or
yeah, my thought on that is that what you do is after you hear from the other members of the public who want to speak on other topics, that you leave the community forum item open. Don't say that it's over. It's just continue the community forum item until later in the evening, and then for those that are here to speak on styrofoam, they would be speaking under public comment at that point or under the community forum.
I knew we could work this out. Thank you. That's, I think, is that acceptable to everyone that would be speaking? I have one objection. You're okay with that? It's highly irregular, but sometimes you got to make government work. So I don't see any raising hands of no, let's do it a different way. I think there's support for that. So I'm going to.
Well, what you could do is for those that don't want to comment later.
Yeah.
As you.
I got it. I think I got
they,
it.
They can comment now.
Yeah, thank you. So let's go ahead and have all topics not related to styrofoam. I will give an opportunity at the, before we move on the agenda, if anyone wants to put in some input on styrofoam before we go to the next item, that's fine. You'll have a chance to speak later, but that's when you'll also be able to tie that in with my report on IWMA. And I think you would want to have that a little opportunity. So I think we're okay. So with that, I'm going to go ahead. I don't see any objections from my fellow council members. I think the city attorney we're okay. So I'm going to go ahead and open up community forum now and encourage anyone on any other item not on the agenda to please come forward. Welcome, first speaker.
Hi, I'm Jamie Umfenauer. I'd prefer not to give my address due to my job.
You do not
the
have
public
to do that.
Airwaves, so that would be fantastic. I do have copies of letters and ordinances for council members, if you would like to have those. I would like to address an issue that our family has been getting harassed on in regards to youth project animals on our own property here in the city of Atascadero. Our family has been raising animals for 4-H and FFA for 10 years now. The harassment started by an anonymous source in January when there were no animals on our property for 4-H and FFA. That we just received a notification from the police department over the weekend because 2 weeks ago 4-H animals start rolling into town that we were in violation of a farm code, but the anonymous complainant had failed to read the youth program ordinances that allow for the exceptions of the 4-H and FFA animals. And so though we are completely compliant with all city ordinances at our house, and that has been verified by Atascadero PD code enforcement, Mayor O'Malley, and our city manager, we're totally fine. It does cause concern because there are anonymous complaints backing up the code enforcement system and using resources for complaints that are unfounded. And whoever the person is that's filing the complaints is doing it all anonymously. So we have no way to educate this person or persons what the processes are here in our city. The city of Atascadero has always been very supportive of FFA and 4-H. And so what I'm asking council tonight is to possibly look at those ordinances again. Maybe we can educate our public better about those exceptions that we do have for the youth programs so that other families will not be harassed like my family has been harassed. And we do live near trailheads, so we believe it could possibly be somebody just hiking through that might not like pigs. I don't know. But we would like to maybe see the city educate the public and look at that ordinance and see if maybe we need to tweak something, make it clearer, or move it somewhere where it's more visible for people who might be questioning whether or not families, the youth in our city, can have animals on their property. Because it is fair season, and in the last couple weeks, hundreds of children in our city have been getting their fair animals. And, you know, San Luis Obispo County is the highest enrollment in 4-H in the entire state. And we have very successful FFA chapters right here in the county. So we have quite a presence, and education of the public might be a great thing. So thank you.
Thank you.
And would the city clerk like these to pass out?
Just if you just hand it to the city police chief, we'll take care of it. Thank you. It would be helpful if anyone else wants to speak on that item. They came at this time just so they're grouped together, but I don't see anyone else coming forward. So next topic, next speaker, welcome. And at the end of public comment, community forum, we will talk about what we will try to do in terms of following up. Welcome.
Hello, Jeff Condon, 8455 San Rafael, Tascadero. Thank you for the opportunity to address City Council. Recently, 8500 San Rafael was sold to Raymond Perez, who has been operating a mental service business at this location. Code enforcement has been in contact with Mr. Perez to understand the code requirements at 8500 San Rafael. There are laws and regulations that all cities must adhere to concerning fair housing laws that allow this business to exist in our neighborhood. Mr. Perez is receiving compensation from the state of California, I believe, to provide housing for these individuals. What are the legal requirements that Mr. Perez must adhere to operate the business? Supervision requirements and qualifications, health and safety, security, outreach to local services provided by nonprofits and the city of Tascadero, the county. I have never seen any state vehicles at this residence or the fire department. Are the safety requirements of Mr. Perez's clients in compliance with state laws and regulations? Who assigns these clients to reside at 8500 San Rafael? Is it the state and independent review board, or is it Mr. Perez's recommendation from his own practice? What type of disabilities do these residents have, and how are they screened? Is our neighborhood and children safe? There is one full-time employee and two clients currently at 8500 San Rafael. The full-time employee is working 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, because we've never seen any staff changes. When this house supervisor runs errands, who's in charge of Mr. Perez's clients? Security cameras were installed last week. Is this a requirement to house Mr. Perez's clients, or was this from a complaint from a neighbor? Mr. Perez has come into the city of Atascadero in our neighborhood with little regards or consideration. Saying that, code enforcement was out there today, and I received an email this afternoon from John Jones. It says, Mr. Condon, I have spoken to both the property owner, Mr. Perez, and stopped by the home at 8500 San Rafael and spoken to the resident employee. The home is being used as a residence for mentally disabled adults. The nature of this residence and the number of people living there do not require any type of license or permit from the city of Atascadero. Because of this, code enforcement will be closing this complaint. But, you know, the neighborhood is, you know, we're all installing cameras and locking our doors now. We have a prison.
Thank you. We, after public comment, we'll kind of address some of those issues. Any other speakers on this topic or any other topic? Welcome.
Good evening. James Brescia. I reside in Paso Robles, but I'm here as your county superintendent of schools, and I wanted to thank your police chief and your community services and your public safety for the mutual aid recently. We've had three fairly serious incidents in our schools this month where we've had to go into either shelter in place or lockdown, and the mutual aid is very much appreciated, specifically with Paso Robles recently. I have been convening a summit of all of the school districts, the charter schools, the sheriff's department, behavioral health, and I will be extending that invitation to your city manager and council members that would like to attend, as well as the chief regularly meets with us and all of the other schools, but more in a proactive sense as opposed to just reactive. We are reacting at this point, but really bringing all of the schools in the county, county government, behavioral health together to get in front of issues and build more community. I believe our sheriff said it very eloquently when he said, we need to get together, bridge the communication, continue to support our community service officers. I want to thank you for having one here in Atascadero. I'm speaking to all the city councils and the Board of Supervisors about the importance of that. And it isn't about having a gun and a badge on a school campus. It's about creating that community and having open communication. So again, as your county superintendent, I'm here if you have questions. And I know most of you, we've all interacted. But again, just thank you to the chief and thank you to your emergency services.
Well, thank you for coming out and being here on and giving this report back on the chief. Good job, chief. And I do want to commend your staff for assisting, and that's very much appreciated. Next speaker, please. Anything that's not on our agenda, this is the time. Saying no one approach, we'll close the...
I don't want to do that.
You're so helpful. We will not close community forum. The correct phrase would be, Mr. City Attorney?
That you will continue the public forum, community forum, until later in the evening, following your report on the report by council members.
So, Ms. City Clerk, what he said. Very good. Thank you. I would like to, if I may, if no objection from anyone, have staff respond to the community forum questions that were raised. I think I've got some ideas on the animal issue. I think staff have got some ideas, and I think there needs to be some explanation on the property address issue. So, Ms. City Manager.
Thank you, Mayor. As a way of a little background, the city does have an ordinance on the number of farm animals that you can have. It's based on your acreage and the type of residential unit you have. Those requirements are modified for youth or 4-H projects. These projects are typically run from about April through the end of the fair, and then most of the animals will disappear from them. So we do allow some lighter regulations or some smaller parcels and allow more animals on there. Both of these the sections can be found in our animal ordinance. They are fairly well together. Certainly we can try and do a press release or something along those lines regarding that. Ordinances are written in a way that they're written for a reason, so it's not always easy to say, hey, and see this section or keep reading down the page, but we can look and see if there's something we can do to make it clear.
Well, my recommendation, and other council members might have some thoughts, I like the approach of taking more of a community information. Unless the chief had some suggestions on the ordinance, I think it really is okay. It's just understanding it. But it seems like this is an opportunity to communicate to the community about this activity that goes on this time of year, 4-H. That's what we pride ourselves in Atascadero, having that elbow room that you can do activities like this. And maybe we could have Terry Banish work on a couple press releases that talk about, you know, that activity. It's proactive. We want to encourage youth activities like that, and that it's short-lived. And you know, who knows? Maybe we can get it on KPRL also. But I think we could certainly get a press release out there on that, or almost more of a human interest story. I think there'd be a potential working with the media. So other council members have any comment on that one?
Yeah, I was thinking maybe we could just take a little piece of that and put it on our website and reference it for the time of year, and this is what happens, and this may be a concern. Look here.
We can look and see if there's a way to make to do that without making things more confusing.
We'll leave it in your hands. Next topic on...
Mr. Condon talked about a house for people with disabilities on San Rafael. As you know, the state regulates and houses with six beds or less. We have no ability to monitor, license, control, or change the rules for activities like this, whether it be a child care activity with six children or less, a house for people with disabilities with six beds or less, even a house with for parolees and others with six beds or less. The state takes that right away from us. So we have no ability to license it. We have no ability to check in to those questions that he had. We don't have that. In fact, the state takes away our ability to even require them to pay business taxes. As you know, we don't have a business license ordinance. We have no ability to deny a business a license because it's a business tax. So the state even takes our ability away in some of those. So this truly is an issue that we have no legal jurisdiction over. We did send our code enforcement out there, officer out there, and it was, the owner was very helpful, or the people that we contacted let us know what type of facility it is. It does sound like that there will be people with all sorts of disabilities, not just mental disabilities, but others as well. And we're certainly hoping that everybody will be a good neighbor to each other and respect each other. So that is what I know on that.
Thank you. And as my recollection is, licensed group homes such as might occur in such a situation are limited to six beds?
That is correct. They are limited to six beds or less. And there are both facilities that are licensed and unlicensed by the state of California, neither of which we have any control over. The state says that we must treat them like any single family home. So the same abilities the city has to regulate who lives in your home is our ability to regulate who lives in these types of homes.
And also, my understanding is there's a differentiation. Usually, licensed group homes or unlicensed group homes are housing folks in a mental health program, maybe a substance abuse program, maybe developmentally disabled. But if there's criminal history or criminal parole probation, I think there's additional requirements that might be. And I don't know if the chief could speak to that or not.
A lot of the licensing has to do with the level of care. What level of care is provided for the residents of a facility? If it crosses over a border, then state licensing steps in and says you have to become a licensed board and care facility. Facilities that or residences that don't reach that level, as this is the case in this particular residence, then they're not actually required to be licensed. Then the state says we as a city are not able to step in and regulate them. Handled as any other single-family residence would be. Our code enforcement officer had the opportunity to go out, meet with the individuals there. They're the type of people that need a little help with life skills, but in many other ways would not be differentiated from anybody else in the community. And so it's not the kind of facility that would require state licensing, nor is it the type of place that would require the city to step in and take some action. As a matter of fact, the code enforcement officer said he found the living situation to be quite pleasant and the people there to be wonderful people. So I look forward to the neighbors getting along just fine once they get to know one another.
Good. And, of course, everyone has to obey the laws that we all have to obey. If there was anyone, including a resident, even though it's not licensed or has any extra restrictions, they're not excused from the law. If they did something that would require law enforcement intervention, you would intervene.
Yeah, you don't have to obey the law, but that's why I have a job. So if in fact we do find that there's criminal conduct in a neighborhood, regardless of whether it's a home or a facility or a single family residence with a, you know, a normal family living there, we'll take enforcement action as appropriate.
Thank you. Other council questions or? Okay, very good. I think that answers our questions on that. We'll move on the agenda to our public hearing, item B1, Title IX Tree Ordinance Update, PLN 2017-1679. And I would assume Mr. Dunsmore, our Community Development Director, will take the lead.
That is correct. And good evening, Mayor and Council. Let's wait a moment for the presentation to come up. Oh, there it is. All right. So tonight we're going to be looking at one of the streamlined items that was actually earlier discussed at our strategic planning. And this particular one is a streamlining of the process of how we handle tree removal permits. Essentially, what we'll be looking at is ways to look at how we can reduce the use of resources, reduce processing time, and essentially the tree ordinance was identified as an opportunity for that. Right now, the tree removal permits are something that are reviewed by the Planning Commission. And what we're seeing is we get very little public turnout and very little discussion, very little testimony on these issues. So it's an opportunity to reduce that level down to the staff level review for most of these tree removal permits. A little background. Our tree ordinance, along with our tree guidelines, were adopted in 1998. The tree ordinance really sets up the procedures for removing trees. It also sets up for the methods of protecting native trees and really the establishment of our native forest. Along with that, those guidelines really get into the details. They're a supplement to the ordinance, and they have planting guidelines and tree varieties and different things like that. So it's a higher level of detail. So right now, we have a tree removal procedure for any property that's in a commercial or multifamily zone. A tree removal permit would be required for the removal of a native tree. When I say a native tree, we're talking about the coast live oaks, the valley oaks, the sycamore trees, the bay laurels, even the black walnuts, considered one of our native trees in the area. That's just the basic varieties. Other scenarios, when there's a construction project being sought or proposed in a single family residential neighborhood, also requires a tree removal permit. So essentially, we see a lot of these tree removal permits in combination with a development project, someone wanting to develop something on their property. Some of the other circumstances include trees that are needing to be removed for a hazardous condition or a dead or dying tree, a tree that's just about to fall onto improvements where it might, if not removed or given attention, could cause issues. So we see a lot of those as well. So right now, anything that's below 24 inches in diameter is already reviewed by staff. It's only these larger trees that currently require the Planning Commission review. With each of these removals, we also have an ordinance that requires mitigation, requires a specific set of findings being made. And none of that's proposed to be changed with this particular proposal tonight. What we're looking at is purely, again, just a process change to change the level of that review from Planning Commission to staff, keeping the same set of mitigation, same set of findings, and same science behind all of this particular process. So what it comes down to, there's about 6 to 8 amendments that we're talking about in detail. Mostly transferring that review authority, as I mentioned, down to staff. What we'd like to do is keep a set of trees, though, however, into a higher level of review that would be reviewed by the Planning Commission. And those are trees that would fit into what we'll call a heritage tree list. Trees such as the trees in Sunken Gardens Park, such as the Deodore cedar, such as the giant coast live oaks that were planted during the era of E.G. Lewis along East Mall and West Mall. There's other significant trees in the community that we have at the Atascadero Lake Park, at Paloma Park, along Atascadero Avenue, and along portions of El Camino Real and even Traffic Way. These are the very significant 100-year-old or plus oak trees, the large valley oak trees, large coast live oak trees that you see around town. So we've established a list and worked quite a lot with ALPS and really looked at, you know, what would constitute those heritage trees to establish that list. Some of the other amendments there that are being proposed, clarification of tree protection plan requirements. This is something when we see a development project that's in close proximity to a native tree, we have requirements to fence around the tree to protect the root zone. During that construction project, we did find the need to clarify some of those protection requirements. We also had some fees that were established in the ordinance, and those essentially belong in our fee ordinance, not in our tree ordinance, because those are things that need to be updated from time to time. And in the tree ordinance, they get outdated. And also, we did find that our process had changed a bit, and so we're looking at some clarification of our when an arborist report is required, along with looking at some posting requirement changes and some other minor amendments. But what I'm going to do right now is I'm going to hand this over to our senior planner, Kelly Gleason, and she's going to get into a little more detail. Hopefully I didn't give away too much of that. to show you some of these items that we're going to be proposing that have already been reviewed by the Planning Commission. And just to back up a little bit, too, the Planning Commission did review these amendments. They are making a recommendation to City Council on these amendments.
Okay, so we'll try not to be too repetitive. The first one was to transfer review authority. So currently, most tree removals that are over 24 inches go to Planning Commission. We don't see a lot of people come out when they're not associated with a development. If they're associated with a development, they'll continue to go to Planning Commission for review and approval. But the trees, we see a lot of trees in multifamily areas and commercial areas that are dead or diseased, and they happen to be very large trees because they've lived a long time. And we don't see a lot of community input on those trees. And so we're looking to transfer that authority down to staff. The findings for tree removal would remain the same. We both make the same findings for removal. So it would still go through that findings process. Mitigation would still be required. And then anything designated as a heritage tree would continue to go to a higher level review and approval. And currently that's recommended as City Council. So as Phil mentioned, we're also establishing a heritage tree list for those really important trees that have some historic value, maybe neighborhood defining character. There's a number of tree locations, clusters of trees that do that in our city right now. So it's proposed that the City Council would review that list, update that list regularly. There'd be a nomination procedure, and you would also review removals for those types of trees. The heritage tree list will be included in the guidelines so that we can update that easily by resolution, and it does not need to be updated by ordinance. And here is our first go at a list of heritage trees. There is some text in red that is not included in the resolution for this evening, but we do recommend that be included, the date listed, and then there's some trees along Traffic Way between Chico and San Benito and kind of the parkway area that are very large trees and character defining for that area. We have some trees in the lake parks. We have some trees along Atascadero Avenue. All of the trees that are currently proposed on the heritage tree list are either within the city right-of-way or on city property. So there are no trees proposed on private property. That will be able to be done through a nomination process, but the list that the city is recommending tonight only includes trees within the right-of-way or on city properties. For tree protection plans, we're just clarifying the requirements. We want to reduce the need for full arborist reports. We want that information on the tree protection plan, on the construction plan set, and it allows us to just standardize some of the information and make our review a little bit easier. As Phil noted, there's fee language in the ordinance and in the guidelines. We're not changing any fees tonight. We're simply removing the fee information from those two sections so that all the fees can be updated regularly with the rest of our fees. In terms of arborist report responsibility, our current code requires that arborists be hired by the city. In 1998, when the tree ordinance was established, we did have an arborist on staff at the city. And so we were able to accommodate that. We're not able to accommodate that at this time. The arborists are hired by each applicant, and we just wanted to clarify that process so that it aligns with current city practices. In terms of posting requirements, we all learned something new when we delved into the tree ordinance to amend it. We currently have a requirement that the lot be posted after a tree removal permit is already approved for a 5-day period to allow for appeals. Our current city process, tree removal permits are approved alongside with construction permits. So those are issued at the same time. And when staff looked at this, a five-day appeal period after the permit is issued is not very practical. They've usually started work, and it doesn't give the neighbors much of an opportunity. So we've amended this section to post any site with a proposed tree removal once we know a tree removal is proposed. That will give the neighborhood some opportunity to comment on the proposed tree removals. We're also sort of beefing up our standards for identifying which trees are going to be removed on site so that the neighbors can clearly see those from the right-of-way and know how they will be affected. We are also going to post removal requests at the counter. We've talked about this with ALPS, and it's not currently included in the ordinance, but it's something that staff will continue to do. One of the reasons we did not want to include it in the ordinance is because we have a new permit system that's going to be up and running in a few months, hopefully very smoothly. And that new permit system might give us some opportunities to do some automatic noticing onto our website or searches that neighbors or interested members of the public can do. And so that process is a little bit in flux and might have some new opportunities associated with it as we move forward with our new permit system. So we're not sort of making that an ordinance requirement now, but it is something that staff is committed to making sure happens. There's just some other minor amendments that we're proposing as well. Our Atascadero Native Tree Association has sort of become ALPS, so we are making reference to them instead of ANTA. And we are modifying our tree replanting requirements that currently have a ratio of one tree per new residential unit. This is all-encompassing and includes our multifamily zones, and with our new state density requirements for higher density residential developments, that's not a feasible ratio to meet. So we are looking at one tree for every five units in those high density zones. We did do some coordination with ALPS. The Planning Commission directed staff to do some coordination with ALPS after they had heard the item and made recommendation to council. So we have made a number of changes, some of which were just included in that presentation, but I'll just go through a couple things that we added. We did amend the noticing requirements to make sure that each lot is posted, so that was part of our ALPS coordination. We added some standard appeal language just so that it was clear that those decisions could be appealed if the neighborhood or any interested person desired to do that. Again, clarification of the regeneration and replanting language for multifamily. Clarification of tree protection plan requirements that an arborist does still need to be involved, but they don't necessarily need to make a written report. Changing the approval process for heritage trees. Staff had originally recommended the Planning Commission review those, but since City Council will be in charge of updating that list and seeing nominations for that list, it was felt that City Council was the appropriate approval body for those removals. And then we deleted all references to ANTA and put ALPS in there. So in conclusion, the proposed changes are aimed at streamlining the process. The findings and mitigation measures still stay the same. We're mostly looking at procedures for tree removals, and then we're establishing that heritage tree list. There are a number of alternatives that you can take tonight. You can, as always, modify any of the proposed changes to the ordinance and the resolution. There's also two attachments for ordinances included in your staff report. One is staff's recommendation, which includes Planning Commission changes and coordination efforts with ALPS. The second ordinance that's available in your staff report was just the Planning Commission recommendation without the additional ALPS changes. And then, of course, the City Council can deny all or a portion of the proposed changes. So we are recommending that you introduce the staff recommended ordinance for first reading to the native tree ordinance in our municipal code. We're also recommending that you adopt the draft resolution to amend the native tree guidelines, and that is with the recommended changes to the heritage tree list to capture those trees on traffic way and include the date of adoption. So that concludes our presentation. I know that ALPS is present in the audience and would probably like to speak, and we're available if you have any questions. Thank you.
Thank you. And again, this is a formal public hearing My encouragement to council members is to limit to questions of staff at this time. We'll go to the public, get public input, then come back for deliberation. And we're going to begin with ex parte communication, which is where we tell you about anything we've heard about this topic that might influence our decision that's happened outside of a public process. So you know what we're basing our decisions on. So with that, I'll just start with from my left and go to my right, if there's any ex parte.
No, I am a member of ALPS, but I've not actually had any discussions with any members of ALPS. So.
Well, what kind of a member are you?
Apparently I'm not very active.
Do you pay your dues?
Yes, that's important.
Okay. Ms. Moreno.
I did have a conversation with a member of ALPS, but it was months ago before this had even come before us. He had just said, oh, I hear it might be coming, and I had just kind of given him the basics, and I said, you know, we're hoping to get your input, and we have, which is great, and that's it.
Thank you.
I did have a call from a previous council member, Jerry Clay, regarding the tree ordinance when it was first put into place with a historical perspective.
I've not spoken to anyone, and I have nothing to add other than what's in the staff report.
Well, I've only had one recent conversation on this topic, as I purposely tried to call some members of ALPS, and I did speak with Corey Meyer, who I consider an expert in the field, and did get his perspective, and he will be sharing anything he shared with me tonight a little bit later. So with that, we can move on to any questions by council members of anything reported by staff. Go ahead, Councilmember Barbeau, followed by Councilwoman Moreno.
I had a question on a slide. You listed the heritage trees, and you listed oaks, Valley Oaks in particular, at the two parks, the Lake Park, yes, on this slide here. And I think I'm sure you partially addressed my question, which is the size. There must be a size that you're focusing on here to have come up with these numbers, because there's many, many trees at these locations. What is the size parameter you established for the Live and Valley Oaks at the two parks for them to be included on this list?
There was not an established size threshold for them, but there are some very significant trees. I'll just say they're very significant in size and age. And in discussion with ALPS and just review of those trees and just past knowledge of those particular trees, for example, some of the spectacular ones that we have at Tascadero Lake Park that shade the park area off of the parking lot there, those are probably trees that it would range well over 100 years and have a diameter at rest height of probably well over 36 to 48 inches. So they're very significant size, but we did not use a size threshold in establishing these trees. It's more on the characteristic and community value of those trees based on their proximity in a public location and their setting. And some of those trees, just to keep in mind, too, aren't even native trees, such as the palm tree in the Vaughn Shopping Center, which has historical significance as it was on the front porch of the founder's home, and the trees out in Second Gardens Park, which are memorialized by their historic setting.
All right. Thank you.
Any other council questions? Go ahead.
Are the heritage trees, do you have them, I'm assuming, mapped or GIS or something? We didn't just kind of go out and count, okay, that's about 25. Like, we know what the trees are, correct?
That's correct. This, okay. For the most part, they're mapped. We're making a more accurate map as we speak.
Okay. So then what is the procedure if somebody, I realize that it would be approved by resolution of the council, what is the procedure if somebody wants to put a tree that's not already on the heritage tree list to actually do so? And have you come up, I know there was some talk of requirements of, you know, size and age and location, but is that going to be more of a kind of a little more flexible, or just kind of bit by bit rather than having these extreme or specific criteria?
There is more flexibility. So anybody who has a tree on the property that they own that they'd like to nominate for the heritage tree list, they can come to us. We will have an application process for that. And that will be something that would come before the city council at this time for your review and ratification. And that resolution would be adopted by resolution and put into the tree guidelines.
Okay. And then is there a cost associated with doing that?
So right now we don't have a cost associated with that. We will be adopting a cost associated with that, and that'll be a separate item as part of our fee study that we'll have to adopt.
Okay. Thank you.
Mayor Pro Tem Fonzie.
Thank you. I just wanted to make sure that there wasn't any changes to the heritage trees mitigation. We had a tree down by Sylvester's that would be considered a heritage tree that recently died and was taken out, and there was discussion about changing those trees as they go into a tree that was more compatible with an urban area. They're currently oak trees. So I wanted to make sure if he had chose to mitigate it, he wouldn't have to put in an oak tree. He could have waited until we had a plan, or there was some way to deal with that.
At this time, that hasn't been determined. Mitigation still lies with what our ordinance identifies, and that isn't changing with this particular action. At some point, we will have a street tree plan that we'll be bringing forward for El Camino Real and Entrada, and even looking at Sunken Gardens Park. And so that's in development now.
Okay, and a second question. I wondered if you had considered any of the trees that are very large up in the cemetery area as being heritage trees. I believe they were probably planted historically in the cemetery.
No, we haven't considered those particular trees.
No further questions by council. We'll open it up to the public, and what I would like to do often is the case when we have something where there's some technical expertise available in the audience. And since ALPS has been involved working with the city on this, I'd like to invite up, I believe, Mr. Mike Orvis here, president of ALPS, is available. If you would like to take the lead and anyone you would like to have join you, we'll hear from your representatives first, then we'll open up to the general public. I'll let Mr. Orvis kind of triage who should do what. Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you. I think I'm going to go ahead and let Corey start off.
Good evening. Well, let's say, sadly, last week we lost an advocate for Tascadero's urban forest. I don't know if you have heard, but Joan O'Keefe passed away. And Joan was a very active member of the Tascadero Native Tree Association for well over 20 years, and she worked on many of the native tree planting projects along with me in town, and also helped see the native tree inventory through completion in 2007, along with many other native tree activities. And we're really, that's a huge hit for us. We're really going to miss her. On to the ordinance. I think it was very productive working with staff. We were glad to have the opportunity to provide input, and I think it was is well received. There are a couple issues that I just like to bring up to reiterate. Under tree removals, both these are under tree removals, 9-11-105C4 under arborist report. It says an arborist report shall be provided when necessary by the community development director for his designee. We would like to see the director create some criteria to be used by staff for when an arborist report is warranted. This may vary with staff's knowledge as time goes on and staff changes. So we'd just like you to be thinking about that. Maybe you could develop a policy, Phil, within the department. And then under tree removals also, under 9.11.105C5 under posting, it says when a tree removal permit is sought, the lot shall also be posted at a visible location along the project frontage for a minimum of 15 calendar days prior to approval. We're happy about that 15 days, by the way. That's great. We agreed with staff that they would also post tree removals at City Hall, and I noticed that you addressed that on up there, and I was happy to see that. And possibly it could be something that the public could get to online, maybe to your website. If that's a possibility, you might be thinking about that too. But those are two items that we'd really like to see worked on. We're very happy with the Heritage Tree Program. It's great to see that finally getting off the ground, and I'm very hopeful that there'll be lots of trees in town that'll be nominated That'll be a great for Heritage Trees in the future as this program gets developed. And other than that, thank you very much. The collaboration was very, very good, and we've been very happy with working with the city on this project. Thank you.
Thank you. Before you leave, we may have a council question for you. Ms. Moreno, did you want a clarification?
Yeah, Corey, could you tell me the first one again? They were both under 911.105.
Yeah. It was under Arborist Report.
Okay.
Did you want me to go over it again?
Just 911.105.
C4.
C4. Okay, so C4 and C5.
Right.
Okay. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. And I do want to comment, I had not heard about Ms. O'Keefe. I think it'd be very appropriate if at some time during this time you'd like to take the lead on a moment of silence for Ms. O'Keefe, especially related to trees. And I look forward to seeing some commemorative activity in the community at some future time. But if maybe you as president, if you would like to take the lead or...
Sure. Yeah, Joan was very special to all of us. And she was probably in everybody's hair quite a bit, you know, to make sure that our native trees were protected. So she did a lot of good in that case. But not only protection, but also with the regeneration. So that's one thing we always have to think about it. It's great to protect, but we need the public to also help with regeneration. And that's pretty much where you get your biggest bang, I think. So with that, Joan, really, she and Corey, I think, were kind of two peas in a pod on that end and have done a great job for many, many years. So anyway, we'd just like to have everybody just... go for a minute here in silence and just think of your last thoughts of Joan and everything she meant to us. So, anyway. Thank you. I'll go ahead with my comments. I'm Mike Orvis, current president of Atascadero Land Preservation Society. I want to thank city staff for reaching out and involving us with the review of the proposed ordinance changes, and especially for incorporating many of our comments. We had a great dialogue, and we appreciate that. Our meetings with city staff were very productive and allowed us to understand the planning process they use when administering the tree ordinance. That was one thing that we really needed to hear from them, is how do you actually go through this process? And it helped us learn some things, and it was very helpful and gave us the information we needed to provide constructive comments and advice. The only thing I can say bad, not bad, but in the schedule for the review of the proposed changes was very tight and fast-paced, and in the future we would appreciate a little more time to digest the information and provide input. We believe these changes will provide city staff more time to review tree removal projects. We hope that they seek expertise when needed, and to monitor the projects to ensure that impacts on our native trees are as small as possible. So with that, thank you very much. We appreciate being allowed to input, and thank you.
Before you leave, and I did want to check, thank you. Yeah, almost made it. Thank you for taking the time and working with staff on this. And even though it is fast-paced, did we leave anything out? Is there something that is undone that you really would like more consideration? I think there's a couple things that staff are going to continue to work on to try to make automated, but did we meet the concerns you had?
Yes. In pertaining to the specific changes, Yeah. Yes. And Corey talked about the couple of things that we'd like a little further discussion on. Jim Patterson was also involved with these, although he's off on a really nice trip to Australia and so couldn't make it tonight, but he was also involved. And down the road, we may have just some other things that we'd like to discuss in the education and process, but not related to the ordinance specifically.
Very good. Well, we welcome your ongoing input. Thank you.
Thank you.
Welcome. Next speaker.
Hi, Ellen Burrow from Atascadero. I am also on the Alps Board, but I'm speaking for myself. These changes were brought to our last board meeting, and after the meeting, I thought about it some more, and I wanted to give some more input. And Dan O'Grady is also on that board, and we had talked about this. He had also been on Planning Commission, and I've been on Planning Commission, so I'm very familiar with how this process has worked in the past. And when I was first on the Planning Commission, I worked with Joan O'Keefe. And one thing I remember is that enforcement is one of the most important parts of the tree ordinance. We can make up tree reports, we can say we're going to save this tree, but if it's not followed and people don't know what is in the mitigation plan, then they can't follow up and say, hey, planning staff, and call them and say, can you go check on this tree protection? This is not where it should be. And I know Joan and I had spent many years doing that in efforts to protect our urban forest. So I would like to have you consider that the report continue to be done, but be put on the consent calendar, because one of the jobs of the Planning Commission is to review projects for the public good. And I understand a lot of people in the public don't have time to come to a Planning Commission meeting, but as a Planning Commissioner, I really found that was a meaningful part of my job, was to review and to go out and see the site of where the trees are going to be removed and see if there was any other options. So I do believe that this would be a part of the public service of being a planning commissioner, is to have it be put on the consent calendar. It does mean they have to write up the report, but then it is in a format that the follow-up can be done more easily. Along with that, I'm happy to hear about the binder with the proposed tree removals, because that was one of the hardest things to do, was trying to find out who's got a permit where, and especially if you had a concern, trying to find out, what is the address of that tree removal. It was difficult to find out. So I think that the binder is a really good idea. Also, the fees, when I was on Planning Commission and City Council, the fees didn't really justify the removal of the tree. And when you put mitigation funds put your fees into the mitigation fund, it has to be meaningful enough that the city can then turn around and use that to purchase property or do a tree planting like Anta did for many years. So I'm hoping that is part of the review of fees that's going to be done, because at the time when I was on serving, they always said, well, that number's locked. We can't change that number. So if that's being moved to an annual review or whenever we do the review, I don't know if it's every other year, I think that would be a good thing. Also, I also wanted to talk about the tree inventory that was done in 2007, as I heard Corey say. And there were some recommendations that were made from that study, and one of them was preserving younger trees, because we have a lot of great old trees, but we have no trees that are kind of in the middle. So I think it's important that we, during this process of protecting our urban forests, that we go back to that tree inventory and make sure we are also incorporating those recommendations. Thank you.
Did you get a chance to complete all of your notes there?
I believe I did. I tried to talk fast. I knew I had to talk
you
fast.
You were talking fast. Fine
Thank
job.
You.
Thank you. Any other speakers on this agenda item? Seeing no one come forward, we'll close the public comment portion of this. Bring it back to council for further discussion or deliberation or a motion. Let me ask staff if there's any comments they would have to anything they heard and any clarifications. I wonder, for example, could you make a note that when fees related to this come up for review at a future date, that just as a courtesy, ALPS is notified of that for any input at that time. I don't know if you have other suggestions. Staff, let's hear from you first.
So I'll address the fee one first. Our service fees, so the fee for reviewing the tree removal plan and going through the process will be coming to the council in May as part of our normal fee update. The tree mitigation fees are very different from those. Those are a lot like our other mitigation fees, and those are as part of the ordinance. We are not updating the tree mitigation as part of our mitigation study that we are doing. We would need, if that was an interest, that would be an undertaking, and we would need direction and funding to do so. So those tree mitigation fees are not proposed being changed, and there's some very specific criteria and a process that we have to go through. Those are a lot more difficult to change, but they are not locked, just time-consuming and expensive to change. There were a couple of other comments. An arborist report shall be provided when determined necessary by the community development director. There was a request that the community development director have a policy. We typically do have internal policies that set general guidelines for those. A lot of times, because Atascadero is a city of exceptions and changes and situations you hadn't thought about, they're not absolute, but they're certainly guiding documents. We wouldn't recommend you change the ordinance, but we can work with ALPS to try and come up with the, you know, something that, that we all feel comfortable with. And so Director Dunsmore can meet with them as part of a continuing dialogue. The same thing as Kelly, Ms. Gleason had said on the posting at City Hall, we'd like to keep that out of the ordinance. We do are making a commitment that it will be posted either at City Hall in a binder, or ideally we'd love to have it on the website where somebody could look up all of the active tree permits. We'd like to do that. We have new software coming online. It'll be installed in May, and we will be looking for opportunities to have that all done automatically and have people have access to that. So we believe that concern, again, we can work with ALPS on the best method to do that and try and keep that going. Did I miss anything that you had as part of your list of questions?
I think you covered it, unless there was something else that I missed there.
Okay, we do have some council questions. I will go to the lights this time, and I would offer the input that it's important to me that we have that automated information available. I think is one offset for not going through the Planning Commission. More folks could have access, and I understand not including it in the ordinance at this time because there's several options you're considering. We don't know exactly how you might implement this through the new software, but I would like to have the city manager give us a report back sometime in the summertime that just let us know how we did that, because if it turns out that there's a problem, and I would you know, I assume you'll review that with ALPS at the time. If there's concerns at that time, then maybe we need to take a look at that again. But I know you've got good intentions to look for the best way we can to have it more open, transparent, and available. But we want to check back and make sure we hear that, yeah, that worked out, or what happened, and ALPS input on that sometime down the road. It could be fairly informal part of your city manager update at a council meeting. But I'd like to make sure ALPS is aware of that. Is that reasonable? Okay. We have a few council questions. Mayor Pro Tem Fonzie.
Thank you. I think we did miss one that was in public comment, and that was Ms. Moreau's suggestion that it be put on the consent calendar at the Planning Commission. And I wanted to ask Mr. Dunsmore, will this defeat the idea of streamlining if we go back to the Planning Commission? I know you wanted to take it out of the Planning Commission's hand and go straight to staff.
Whether the item's on consent or not, we still have to hold a hearing. We have a lot of Planning Commission hearings right now where the tree removal permits are the only item. So that brings everyone out, the commission out, staff out. That's one component that wouldn't be saved. The other issue is we still would have to prepare that staff report and do the noticing and all of that. So it sounds to me at first glance that might defeat the purpose of the streamlining altogether. But it's at council's discretion as to how we want to respond to that.
Thank you.
Well, I have a thought which might be a terrible idea, but many communities have more committees and commissions than we do, and I don't know that we want to get too formal because, again, that just adds we're trying to streamline. But one thing I appreciated about Ms. O'Keefe, loved having her on the Planning Commission because often there would be an item that's related to trees and we're all kind of wondering, well, I wonder how this will go. And if Joan said it was okay, we're pretty much done. We knew there was not going to be a problem and we could move on. And I think because I think we've been pretty open and transparent on some of these issues, we haven't had some of the fights that occurred years ago, and I think it happens because, you know, I think council's given direction, staff has really worked at working with organizations like used to be ANTA, but ALPS I think has really evolved to be a true community partner, and I'm really okay if that's why I think it's so important that we find a way to get the information to an organization like ALPS, and I'm pretty much okay. I think it's almost a better resource that if ALPS is aware and they would raise questions directly to staff, and I think staff would address that, that's almost more valuable than going to the Planning Commission. So it's something I would keep in mind in thinking about this. With that, we have a number of council members ready to weigh in. Mayor Pro Tem Fonzie, you're answered your question. Next is Councilwoman Moreno, followed by Councilmember Burbeau.
So I think part of Ms. Barrow's question or her concern that if it didn't go to the Planning Commission, then there wouldn't maybe be appropriate follow-up. Is that something that you can address in this? Does that have to do with the new system that we're putting into place? But the follow-up that when we say, you know, okay, yay or nay, or here's what can be done, and making sure that that is stuck to, is that's sort of what I was hearing from Ms. Barrow.
I'm going to have Kelly answer part of that. But what I wanted to also remind everyone of, most tree removal permits, I would say 90%, are going to continue to go to Planning Commission, even with this new process. The reason for that is most significant tree removals occur with development projects that also have other implications that require Planning Commission review. It's a pretty small category where there's just a tree removal and it's over 24 inches and it's solely going to commission to be removed for no other reason.
Good point.
So that aside, the other issue, I think Kelly was going to respond to.
Yeah, so in terms of enforcement, what we do is either a pre-construction meeting when there's trees involved, or at least, you know, we do an inspection of their tree protection measures and make sure their tree protection's in the right place. When there's a larger development plan or construction that's very close to a tree, we usually do a pre-construction meeting where we meet out there with the project arborist and the grading contractor so that everybody's aware of what mitigation measures are involved on the site. Because we're now including this as part of the plan set, our inspectors will be seeing this on a regular basis when they go out to do their inspections. They're already fairly knowledgeable and helpful in that way. If they see tree protection fencing down, they do list it as a correction. If they see something out of place, they come back and let us know that maybe we need to work with the arborist or the applicant a little bit more. So as long as we have eyes on that site and people, you know, are going out there to do inspections, even if they're not part of the planning department, we do get notified when tree protection is not up and in the right spot and when the measures aren't being followed. So those procedures will still remain in place, and then having the tree protection plan as part of the construction document set, we think will help with some of those concerns as well.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
Yes, my question actually involved heritage trees, and not so much relative to the ordinance itself, but as we noticed, like with the Sylvester's tree needing to come down for safety reasons, the school district took down a whole bunch of trees, you know, very old trees along the street here. What are we going to do to have a plan to say, you know, this tree is 150 years old and it's, you know, sometime in the next 10, 20, 30 years it's going to fall apart? And it just isn't really need to be part of the ordinance, but just we should have a plan for replacing trees, because I'm all about, you know, regeneration, not And so we don't have to be so concerned when an individual tree comes down and leaves a huge gaping hole. So that may not even be your area, but that's just something I'd like to see addressed by staff. And I don't know if you have any feedback on that at this time.
Yes, and what you're referring to really is what we call an urban reforestation plan, which many communities have. And that, as I think, as staff alluded to earlier, is something that we're looking at now because of the loss of our big, significant deodar cedar, the potential future loss of one of our magnolias in the park, and some of the other, and the loss of the Sylvester's tree, and then looking at the quality of our street trees right now in El Camino and on Entrada. These are a topic right now that are going to come back before council to look at a plan for replanting in all of those areas and how that should be done, natives versus non-natives, the whole situation. So we're examining tree varieties now, and we're in close discussion internally and soon to be externally with folks about that whole endeavor.
Thank you, because that's what I'd like to see, and I'm glad you brought up the deodars, because it's a great example that we should do something so that when the time comes, you know, we have some greenery there and not a gaping hole. And Mr. Mayor, I probably have some comments, but I don't have any further questions.
Thank you. Well, we have closed public comment portion, so at this point you can kind of mix questions with comments, so if you want to go ahead.
Okay. Well, I am one who actually, you know, had pushed for this, had brought this up in last year's strategic planning as an area when we've been searching for how can we streamline things, and I did that because of sitting on a planning commission where we had numerous, maybe it was a small proportion of all tree removals, but we had numerous items that involved strictly tree removals. The reports were rather lengthy. I'm sure took a portion of staff's time, and I definitely would not want to see them have to do reports on that. I think the binder, you know, or having, and which hopefully will be automated, but having a readily available central point that anybody can come in and see, you know, here's 10 active tree removal permits, is a good way to go. But I'm pleased about this because I wanted to see a way where we could reduce staff time spent on this, because I don't think we have a huge problem in the city of, you know, rampant tree removal. I think the vast majority of property owners value their trees, and we should encourage the planting of more. And I'm also glad, though, not just to save staff time, but in lightening up on the requirement for arborist reports. I don't like imposing report requirements on property owners. To kill a tree to generate a lot of paper in a report. I'd rather see that kind of money go into planting more trees. So I'm pleased with this overall thing, and I would be happy to make a motion to adopt the staff's recommendation with the items that they worked with Alps on.
Thank you. Well, we'll hold that thought and see if there's any other comments by council or questions by council. Go ahead, Councilman Sturdivant.
I just, you know, in looking at this, tackling this issue and having ALPS input, being able to facilitate with the city and really help us come up with a plan that something that really works that can streamline this process, I really appreciate that. I really do want to make certain that going forward, like the mayor said, there's a check-in. But no, this has been a very good process in helping us to streamline our process, but also take into consideration the protection of our trees. So, thank you.
Other comments? Go ahead and make a comment.
Yes, thank you. I think the streamlining is a good idea. I think that any way that it helps staff to get through the process and keeps the public engaged at the same time is a good thing. I would hope that ALPS would step forward in memory of Joan O'Keefe. I remember many planning commissions. Ellen and I would sit on the same commission, and she would bring up tree protection that was missing and tractors that were parked underneath the trees, and we heard this time and time again. And I would hope that ALPS would pick up her mantle and continue on with that, because it does save the trees that are supposed to be protected. Thank you.
Excellent thought. With that, I think I heard a motion by Councilmember Rabeau and a second by Councilman Fonzi. Is that correct? Okay. Ms. City Clerk, we have a motion by Councilmember...
Right. I just want to make sure that it's the ones that are up there, because the ones that are up there are not the same that was in the agenda. So there was a change to the heritage tree list that goes with the resolution. Mm-hmm. So I just want to make sure that the motion includes that new change.
Right. Yes. So we're moving to adopt draft resolution A with the staff recommended changes to the heritage tree list.
Perfect.
Tree list.
Okay.
Thank you. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Burba?
Yes.
Councilmember Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Councilmember Sturdivant?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Fonzie?
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley?
Yes.
Oh, you know what? Wait, I forgot to read the title. Okay, the title of the ordinance, an ordinance of the City Council of the City of Atascadero, California, amending the Atascadero Municipal Code, Title 9, Chapter 11, Atascadero Native Tree Ordinance. Okay, now motion passes.
Thank you. I'm so glad you finally made a mistake after how long have you been here? I make several each time we meet. I'm so thankful. We're moving on to next items on the agenda, which really are our, did we need a brief? We're going to take a very short 5-minute break. You're still here. Okay. Well, great. We're going to reconvene our meeting. We have moved on to a section called committee reports and council information items. And I would recommend in the future that if you do have something that is really of interest to you, if you let the city clerk know ahead of time, sometimes we can adjust and certainly allow for like overheads, and we can grant a little more time if you check in with the mayor and or city clerk or city manager ahead of time. So we're kind of modifying with agreement. I've got a fine line to walk on this. The city attorney is keeping his eye on me. I'm going to look for a little light to go on over here because we cannot certainly take action on anything that just comes up at a community forum, because it's only fair that everyone in the community knows what we're going to take an action on. So we have to publicly let folks know what's on the agenda, and we disclose what's going into our decision. So we really can't take action. But I, in a sense, have taken some action already at our Integrated Waste Management Authority meeting, so I can kind of tell you what I've already done and what is going on at a different level. That would be part of my normal report here. So what I'm going to do is kind of jump topics here. We're going to go straight to my report under Mayor O'Malley, Integrated Waste Management Authority, talk about what's going on at that level and what we've talked about there. Then we'll continue our public hearing, or our, not a public hearing, community forum, where you're going to just tell us anything you want to tell us. We really can't have interaction, but after that, we can't take any action then either, but I can tell you what I think will be happening to some degree, and if there's some direction by the council of some ideas, we will have some discussion by the council. They can give direction for a future meeting, certainly. So I'm going to go ahead. We can probably do that. There's some challenges of on the reporting, but shall we give that a try, Mr. City Attorney?
I think if there's folks who can't wait, they should be allowed to speak now.
Yeah. Okay, let's go ahead with community forum and see how that goes.
Good evening, City Council and City... Thanks, sir.
Good evening, Atascadero City Council and city staff. My name is Gavin Hughes. I'm a high school student at Paso Robles High School. Admittedly, I am not a citizen of Atascadero, but my father was. He was Greyhound, go Greyhounds. I'm a passionate member of the Central Coast community. I love it here. I'm tremendously proud of the region I've grown up in. And I'm the Wilderness Club president at Paso Robles High School, so I have a strong belief that environmental issues shouldn't know school rivalry boundaries. I think Greyhounds and Bearcats can collaborate on many issues, and this is one of them that I believe is pretty pressing. I'm speaking to you guys today on behalf of a presentation that I gave last week at the Paso Robles City Council meeting on banning styrofoam. That was more of an agenda item. This is more of a public comment, but I'm going to say the same things anyway. We believe, me and my team at Wilderness Club, believe that we should put this on high consideration for being banned in Paso Robles as well as Atascadero. There's a lot of inherent reasons that that styrofoam is not a good product to use. For one, it's notoriously hard to degrade. Like, we believe that studies estimate that every piece of styrofoam that humanity has ever produced is still with us. It's still on Earth. A lot of it's in the ocean. A lot of it takes up space in landfills. And most of it is so small that the marine animals mistake it for food and they ingest it and then they bioaccumulate this toxin, which, as it turns out, styrofoam is made out of a neurotoxin. Styrene is its basic component. Polystyrene and styrofoam both derive their names from styrene. It's been proven to be a neurotoxin, especially when ingested in small quantities with marine life. That deteriorates our ocean ecosystems, which are a vital part of the entire community here, regardless of whether you're dealing with a coastal city or not. With regards to these inland cities like Paso Robles and Atascadero, it's especially important that we consider doing this because we are located on very, very seasonal waterways that when they are reinvigorated as they were now, as we saw last week, and as we saw with all the flooding and the torrential rains, and now we've got beautiful water flowing through, all that styrofoam just kind of picks up. It's very, very light. It's very buoyant. Floats right on up north out into the Salinas watershed, into the ocean. And a lot of it doesn't make it to landfills, doesn't make it to somewhere that's containable because it's so light and because it's so, just it carries so naturally. So I want to pose that to you guys to think about. There's a lot of inherent reasons we should consider banning it, but geographically as well, it's important.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Welcome next week. And I would ask you to hold your applause. It does allow the meeting to keep moving a little quicker. Welcome, next speaker.
Thank you. My name is Mason Seaton Hansen, and I am also a senior at Paso Robles High School. And just a little bit more on styrofoam. One of the sad ironies about styrofoam is that, of course, when the marine ecosystem, animals in the marine ecosystem ingest styrofoam, of course, we eat a lot of those marine animals. And then the styrene comes into us. So the litter that we put out, those neurotoxins, that if we don't do something about it, they come right back to us. So it's not just an environmental issue, it's also a public health issue. And some other cities in the county have already taken action on this issue. San Luis Obispo requires that all the products that they sell are recyclable, compostable, or biodegradable. Styrofoam's not any of those. That it's here in Slo County, it's not recyclable, and so it's definitely more of an. There are many and more environmentally friendly options to use instead of styrofoam, and some of them are even more cost effective. Styrofoam is often used for plates, it's used for cups, and it's used for, of course, the to-go containers that it's so famous for. And for cups and plates, there are actually cheaper options. Right here we can see, I have a little chart, little rigid plastic cups are cheaper than styrofoam cups. Paper plates are cheaper than styrofoam plates. The only product that's cheaper to make with styrofoam is the to-go container, the clamshell container. But even then, more renewable alternatives are being constructed, and their prices are going down as well. And the current one is 9 cents more expensive than a styrofoam clamp container, and that price is dropping. There have been, in other cities that have proposed styrofoam bans, there have been exemptions for hardships for businesses just in case they might not be able to handle a styrofoam ban. In San Luis Obispo, this sort of hardship exemption was allowed, and only one business took it up because it's not a major detrimental impact to economics to ban styrofoam, but to allow styrofoam is a great detrimental impact to public health and to the ecosystems. So with that in mind, I would just encourage Tascadero City Council to protect the health of the community here and the ecosystems around this community by banning the commercial use and sale of polystyrene foam. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome, next speaker.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen of the City Council. My name is Robert Skinner. I'm a social studies teacher at Paso High School, and I've been living in this community for over 30 years. I want to begin by apologizing to Mason and Gavin. They're from Paso High, and last week they presented a wonderful presentation, PowerPoint. It was a very visual PowerPoint, and in the end, the City Council in Paso, they heard the presentation. They were impressed enough to say, okay, we're going to put this on an agenda item, and they considered it, and it's going to be considered in the future. So I apologize to them, because immediately after that meeting, I said, hey, you guys, give up some of your time. Come over here and speak to City Council over here in Atascadero. And they said, of course, we'll do that. But one person asked me, was there going to be any problem with IT? And I said, no, of course not. I've been to your meetings here, the wonderful screen. I can see that we're going to be on TV. What could go wrong? And suddenly I realized that, oh, there's a 24-hour notice. And I didn't realize that until 23 hours ago. And so we have a problem here. And I apologize to them, and I apologize to you, because if you would have seen the entire presentation, you would have been able to visualize everything that they mentioned. You would have visualized the proximity of Atascadero to the Salinas River, and you would have been able to visualize the styrofoam flowing all the way up to the Monterey Bay estuary up there. You would have been able to visualize some of their graphs that there is no economic impact on the local businesses. All of this you would have been able to visualize, and in the end, I guess I perhaps owe you an apology, because you would have realized how great of a presentation it was and how effective it would be, and I'm hoping that you will consider putting this on an agenda item for the future for them to look into, because I would really hate for you to have to look at them and say, hey, we took disregard for your future, and we postponed and we ignored this serious environmental issue. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome. Next speaker.
Good evening, City Council, staff, and community. I'm going to piggyback on what Robert said. I can see why the overhead wasn't allowed, but I don't understand why the students weren't going to get extra time for their presentation. They had 10 minutes, 10 minutes each? Paso? Yeah. Okay. And also to ask the audience if they mind changing the agenda after they were told to be here at a certain time was very awkward. And so they've had to wait an hour and a half. And they are students, and they are on break, but they have other things to do. Okay, why I'm really here today is to talk about the culprit of pollution, polystyrene, in our great city. Styrene is a petroleum product, and it's flammable and hard to break down. It does fill our landfills and takes up to 500 years to disintegrate, and then it disintegrates into tiny little bits that's ingested by our wildlife and fish. A polystyrene ban would benefit our parks and maintenance. They'd be grateful for such a ban. I play pickleball at the community center, and every time I go, there's straws, caps, polystyrene containers, litter. It would also impact our landfills if we had less polystyrene, and that's a city responsibility. A foam ban means our birds and wildlife will not ingest polystyrene and die. Polystyrene contamination is everywhere, on our streets, parks, creeks, stream beds, and it's carried to our Pacific Ocean. We need to enforce compostable, recyclable, and reusable products. Decreasing the scale of polystyrene waste isn't going to be an overnight project, but will happen if our local city officials are committed. Over 100 cities in California have a polystyrene ban ordinance and have implemented the ban without difficulty educating businesses or enforcement. The template for the ordinance is out there. We are looking to you, city council persons, to lead the way. We need a city council dedicated to the preservation of our environment. We need to show our tourists who come from San Francisco and LA, where recyclables are in use, that we too have made the commitment to cut back on polystyrene waste. Please agendize this item. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome. Next speaker.
Good evening. I'm Marty Brown, and I live right downtown, beautiful Atascadero. And I'm here with other concerned citizens of Atascadero, urging you to join other cities in our county to ban products made of styrofoam for use and for sale by businesses in our city. Five other cities in our county, San Luis Obispo, Arroyo Grande, Pismo Beach, Grover Beach, and Morro Bay, plus 115 other California cities, have recognized expanded polystyrene as harmful to human health, a threat to wildlife, and a costly waste problem in our environment. Paso Robles City Council last Tuesday, after listening and viewing a compelling PowerPoint presentation by students from Paso Robles High School, have agreed to put this important issue on their next agenda. Many restaurants have already seen the need to change their to-go boxes from non-recyclable styrofoam to cardboard and other biodegradable alternatives. In fact, their customers have requested and appreciated their cooperation in caring for our health and that of our environment. My friends and I tried our new Mexican restaurant here in town, Ortega's, and one of us asked for a container to take some food home. At first, they were going to package it in styrofoam, a clamshell box. We asked for something more biodegradable, and they gave us the food in a tinfoil pan with a paper lid. No problem. McDonald's has stopped packaging their foods in styrofoam. It is a good idea to put a container in your car for this usage. We take our own bags to grocery stores, and it has not been a burden on folks, and it has saved all that plastic from ending up at the disposal site or a litter in our environment. Every piece of plastic manufactured on Earth is still with us. We have seen the massive flotillas of plastic waste in our oceans, the clogged stream beds and lakes. China has stopped accepting our plastic waste. 8 million tons of plastic is dumped into the ocean every year, 5 trillion pieces. Even deep sea fish and other aquatic life have been found with plastic in their bodies. Plankton, the tiny sea creatures that supply 50% of Earth's oxygen, are affected. It is incumbent on us consumers to stop using it. The manufacturers of it will stop making it if the demand is not there. I have volunteered at a local wildlife rescue center for years and have seen up close suffering, starvation, and death caused by ingested species pieces of styrofoam in seabirds and other birds, opossums, squirrels, turtles, and more. I'm running out of time. The city of Atascadero has a duty to protect the health, safety, and welfare of the community and enhance the natural environment. Please put this on your next agenda for action. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome. Next speaker.
Hello. Dr. Cynthia Lewis. I'm Cal Poly trained marine biologist. I live in Templeton, grew up in San Luis Obispo. So I just kind of missed Atascadero. We used to come here, but I haven't lived here. Almost 30% of landfills are styrofoam and polystyrene. It sort of lasts forever. Half-life is the time required for half of a reactant to be depleted or to decompose and decay. The half-life of that polystyrene cup you tossed in the trash this morning, as was stated, is at least 500 years. It could be up to actually 10,000 years. So none of us are going to be around that long. Because of this, the wildlife that might come across that decomposing cup, which takes a long, long, long time, might eat it. They are not connoisseurs. As the styrene breaks down, it blocks the digestive system, leads to choking, ultimately death. There is nothing sadder than microtrash killing our iconic endangered California condors, especially when this is preventable and man-made. Why should you care? How would you like some toxins with your coffee, your soup, your beer? Sounds like a tasty addition, right? No. Trace amounts of styrene migrate into food, and their toxicity increases significantly in hot liquids. I know you're thinking, it's such a small amount. Well, a pot a day, drinkers, there's a lot there. Though the dose may be low, think about the cumulative effect. Just how many cups of coffee or microwaved ramen noodles have you consumed in your life? Here's a little food for thought. Along with being possible carcinogens, styrene is a neurotoxin. As has been pointed out, it builds up in fatty tissue. So the tired feeling, headaches, reduced concentration, possible other effects could come from that. How about the air we breathe? When polystyrene is incinerated, it releases some serious carbon monoxide into the air. Toxic. Harmful hydrocarbons mixed with nitrogen oxides, think sunlight on a landfill, and form some serious dangerous air pollutants, wheezing, asthma, bronchitis, all health effects caused by tropospheric ozone. Polystyrene is made from petroleum, non-sustainable, harmful, an environmental hazard from minute one. We need to be stewards of our environment, not destroyers. Thank you very much. I will reuse my mug.
Thank you. Welcome. Next speaker.
And I am Janine Rands. I'm here from San Luis Obispo and am chair of the Slow Foam Free grassroots organization that organized 4 years ago. We've successfully convinced five cities, most recently January 22, Grover Beach signed on. Very, very proud of them. Their ordinance takes effect in July of this year. When we first started 4 years ago, San Luis Obispo took a year to deliberate this ordinance. We had 300 restaurants, and 75% of them approximately used foam in takeout, and like the Panda Express used styrofoam exclusively in the restaurant to serve your food. Today, 100%, I want to go on, do not use foam at all. It is not for sale in any retail. Your city, every retail sells foam. That's a lot of it's a lot of waste to get rid of when it only can go to landfill. A couple months ago, I stopped in and did a tabulation of Smart and Final. We don't have one in San Luis anymore, or Arroyo Grande, but it was in Tahoe. I went through because I presented this whole thing in Tahoe, and Tahoe now is our 115th city. The National Treasure will have no foam starting in August. Everybody has to get rid of it. There were 15,000 cups from 8 ounces to 24 ounces just on the cup aisle. I didn't even get to the plates and the clamshells and the bowls and the ice cream cups. That was a whole nother aisle. Tourists come. Tourists come from all of the 115 cities that are the wealthy cities: Malibu, Long Beach, Culver City, They all want to come up here. I can tell you that people that are from a foam-free city abhor styrofoam. They've gone to a restaurant and they get a takeout. The image of Atascadero is very important. You're on the way to, you're in part of wine country. You've got to have the better image than just cheap styrofoam. Speaking of costs, you say, oh, we have to let our poor restaurants take, you know, we have to be careful of them. They're on a small budget. Those restaurants need to be responsible for the disposal of this very expensive, never going away waste product. In addition, and what we got going in Tahoe, the cutlery, the straws, and stirrers should be on request. When a restaurant says, oh, we can't afford it, hey, let's ask them to get rid of those cutlery, get rid of the straws. 400,000 straws are used in Slo County every month. Stop the use of straws. Stop, because it's a polystyrene product.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Welcome. Next speaker.
Hi, I'm Susan Funk, and I am from Atascadero, and I think we can all decide that the Chicago grade needs a little bit less of that. Wiser minds than mine have given you a lot of good arguments on this topic. I just want to call your attention to a few things, and I want to bring your minds first back to the strategic planning session that we were at. It's, if you recall, at the very end of that, when I was the sole member of the general public, still representing all the good folks of Atascadero at that session, that the issue of styrofoam came up, and the council in that informal discussion noted that the mayor in particular noted that caterers are used to receiving the request not to bring foam containers for things, and that it would not be a burden to the city contractors, people who are vendors who are coming up for city events, to be told that we do not want foam for the city. That the council had some interest in guiding the staff not to have foam at city events or city purchased foam. That particular item did not make it into the minutes of the things, but as a guidance to staff, I'm wondering that I'm sure the city attorney will advise whether the council could in fact do this tonight, formalize that as guidance to the staff that was informally given at the strategic planning committee, so that it can take, the council might be able to take a positive step tonight, in addition to whatever goodies the mayor has for us about the Waste Management Authority, in order to move this forward. I also encourage the council to make a decision to agendize this item so that it can come back for comment, because we've seen from what the others have said that this is now something that can be handled on kind of a cookie-cutter basis for the city without a lot of extra time for the city staff to figure out what the ordinance needs to be, with excellent templates from other communities in the area for communicating it, so that we can minimize the kind of time that's involved in, you know, creating the ordinance and having it be enforced, and focus instead in saving some staff time that's currently spent cleaning up all of this quite crumbly crud out of our parks and off the grates in our sewer system and every place else that this stuff ends up, and piling it up in the Chicago grade for perpetuity. We can do better. We can also, it's also very consistent with our community's spirit, and what, you know, we like to think of ourselves as a bit of a Norman Rockwell type place. Styrofoam cup, not Norman Rockwell. It's not part of our image. It doesn't help us. And so I encourage the council to take this matter up in a formal way in the future, and in the meantime, give guidance to the staff.
Thank you. Welcome. Next speaker.
Hi, Ellen Barreau again. And when I was mayor in 2009, there was actually a resolution regarding use of plastic bottles and decreasing use of styrofoam foam. At that time, and it was only a resolution because it did not have council support to make it into an ordinance. But I think as we evolve, it's been 9 years since that time, we need to think about what's changed since that time. And all of us have gone to our creek cleanup days and pulled out a lot of plastic bags and plastic bottles and styrofoam cups. And so I think we need to evolve our resolve as a city as well by formalizing it into an ordinance. And so I do suggest that you agendize this item for future discussion. I remember going to the Sunset Saver events, and they were a zero-waste event, which means all their cups were compostable. I believe there were corn starch was what the cups were made out of. And I try to personally thank a restaurant if I need to take something home that it's not styrofoam. But what happens is that was one of the encouragements in my resolution was in a guideline for new restaurants to use paper products or non-foam items for takeout. And I did notice that some restaurants in our city did do that. But since it's been 9 years, you know, those kind of good efforts kind of fall by the wayside. And I think it may be time for us to have an ordinance. I want to say that, you know, as we listen to the younger people coming up and see their resolve on trying to make this world a better place, that I think we need to listen to them. And I have younger people in my family too, and they always encourage me to keep pushing. And even though I'm not on city council, I encourage you also to take part and embrace change as it happens and as the science supports that. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome. Next speaker.
It's going to restart, I believe. There it is. All right, I'll do my best to be concise. My name's Corey Jones. I live in Shell Beach, but I was raised in the area from Santa Maria to Wasna Valley to Arroyo Grande and then went to Cal Poly. And currently I'm working with the Tascadero School District a lot, highlighting their AP programs, their arts programs, and their athletics. But with that being said, I've been somewhat of a community organizer on the environmental front for the past 3 years at this point. Helped Cal Poly out with waste orientation, so producing content to bring students into the school and educate them on 80% waste diversion by 2020 and measures they can do to hit those goals and things of that nature. But expanding beyond that, I understand that some of you may be hesitant to actually implement regulation from a standpoint of using city staff and government resources to actually take the time when the IWMA may do it on a countywide scale, or you're scared of actually regulating small businesses in the county as a out of fear of cutting into their margins and their bottom lines and actually affecting these businesses that support families. And I'll note that, as the other young student said, when San Luis Obispo did pass that measure back in 2015, only one business did file for hardship. The rest became compliant with relative ease. And even expanding beyond that, as they talk about 115 cities throughout the state that have implemented it, in the county, we began in 2015. The first ordinance in the state, though, began back in 1988. So that's at 30 years at this point. So this isn't a really fast sweep. It's been picking up momentum, especially locally as of late, but it's nothing that we're extremely early adopters for. Then even extending beyond that, out of those 115 cities, there's not one instance in which it has been repealed. So it's proven successful. I'll also extend on the fact that we've been knocking styrofoam specifically as this really bad waste product. I mean, plastics, compostables, everything single use is not ideal. But specifically styrofoam, we don't have the infrastructure and the market is not there to process it. So when we take back and even remove the partisan standpoint of regulation and look at the fact that we're all raised in this county and have values for open space, going outside, and that's nothing that's partisan. You know what I mean? You enjoy going outside, whether you're on a hike, whether you're running, whether you're hunting. We all have some standpoint of conservation. So what I'll say beyond that is, from a standpoint of convenience, for a simple one-time consumption, we're consuming something and allowing it to endure beyond our own lifetimes, whether it be in a landfill or whether it gets in the environment and then causes all those problems that everyone else was able to elaborate on. So what I encourage you to do is agendize this item. I understand you could defer to the IWMA, but politics are always politics, and at the end of the day, people could defer and say they want to leave it up to the independent jurisdictions. But with the five cities that have passed it, with Paso agendizing it, if they've moved forward, if you move forward, then it's going to be hard for the rest of the IWMA board to defer
and not extend this to the rest of the jurisdictions. So that being said,
thank you
for your time.
Welcome. Next speaker.
Hello, my name is Deborah Skinner, and I didn't come planning to speak. I didn't come with anything prepared, but I was here the last time this subject was brought up at our city council. We had some young Boy Scouts here, and I felt that there was not really enough respectful response to their requests. I felt that the responses that were given were superficial in the sense that they were sort of off-the-cuff remarks like, well, you know, these can be made into furniture, and that kind of thing. It's pretty well established that the amount of styrofoam being used is way more than what could ever possibly be turned into furniture or any other products. I've watched documentaries about styrofoam cups. We have manufacturers who make them, and we have the recyclers who process them in other parts of our state. They can't even recycle the amount that they're creating in their own county. So that's not a very thoughtful, respectful response. I also feel that when we have it demonstrated in our county with other jurisdictions, that it's not really sufficient to say it's going to take too much staff time or that it's going to be difficult to enforce when we haven't heard any data or statistics from the other cities who are doing it. We're not hearing. San Luis has expressed that they're not able to afford to implement this program because of the cost or because of the extreme amount of staff's time or the difficulty in creating an ordinance. I really would like to see that there's more leadership here and more of a response to our community, especially the young people who are obviously very intelligent, have researched this stuff, and a superficial answer is not adequate for them. You want to have their respect. You want to feel like you're listening to them. And when you have intelligent young people come up here and then respond with a sort of a superficial, off-the-cuff answer, that's not enough for them. These are guys who are way smarter than most of us. So please take this a little more seriously. Be willing to go out there and be a leader. We don't have to wait for the whole county to do it before we do. That's not something that garners the respect of our young people either, or our constituency. And I'm sorry, I don't mean to be negative. It's just, I'm frustrated. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome. Next speaker.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor O'Malley, council members. My name is Luke Dunn. I'm from San Luis Obispo, a preschool teacher in the area, student. I also work with a waste management company called the Trash Pirates who facilitate different events such as Lightning in a Bottle. Anyway, I have a lot of exposure with trash. And just before I jump in, I wanted to say thank you for Janine and all the students that spoke, everyone who's been sort of really hitting the boots on the ground and done all the steps that, you know, the ballot initiatives, the hundreds if not thousands of people have signed, the countywide ban on polystyrene, and just all the efforts and inspiration that woman right over there is one of the reasons I'm here. But I just wanted to basically say that this is just the tip of the iceberg when we're talking about all these sort of environmental or expanding our perception in these environmental issues. I also wanted to thank Councilmember Moreno for your water bottle, having that be a perfect example on how this is just the tip of the iceberg, sort of like rethinking all of our consumer habits and kind of diving into that. We all have the power to kind of support these different products, and I just noticed that, and I wanted to say thank you for Councilmember Moreno for doing that simple thing like that. But that's to go ahead and not take up too much more time and see what you guys have to say.
Thank you. Are there any other speakers on this topic? Seeing none, we'll close the community forum portion. And I guess what's really disappointing is that you didn't get it agendized. And I guess we have to work with our school systems. We've communicated with Atascadero quite a bit. But if you did a presentation at PASO, you got it on the agenda, which means you got stuff to them ahead of time. And that would allow us to have a lot more interaction. So I really wish we could have had that opportunity. But I appreciate everyone coming out and the input, but I wish we could have had that presentation you had in PASO. How did step up to the mic a moment, sir? because we can't really have a dialogue, or because I think it's just important to get that point, that how did you get on the Pass Robles Council agenda?
What I recall is there we had a meeting at the Progressive Club with Mason, and we basically said, hey, let's circulate a petition. We spoke with Ms. Rams. And
you talked to someone at the Paso clerk's office?
May I slow down a little bit?
Okay.
I am a teacher out of Paso Robles High School, and I'm a co-advisor to the Paso Robles High Progressive Club. We started meeting earlier this year. I can't remember that time. But eventually what happened, I think around January, it came across our radar that there was going to be some action taken by Ms. Rand's organization coming up here to ban styrofoam. And she informed us that there would be a meeting, I guess it would have been March 20th in Paso Robles, and March 27th here. And so we started circulating a petition as a club, and then we basically said we're going to meet there. We did get in touch with Mayor Martin.
A Greyhound.
And we spoke with him. Yeah. And I think part of the situation also is that, Mason, you're on the Youth Commission? Okay, so I think there was a connection there.
Yeah, see, I think the point I'm trying to make, and it really doesn't matter what process motivates you to get there, there is a process to get on the agenda. And I just wish we would have connected. Apparently, you must have gotten on the agenda in Paso, and that's wasn't on our agenda, which is really unfortunate because I'd like to have more interaction. But I think in the future, I think you could learn from the Paso experience. You know, I hope we could do that.
Okay, so I guess the question is, where do we go from here? I'm seeking wisdom from you in this.
Well,
give
me
advice. What do we do?
Well, always it's a good idea to check in with the city manager, city clerk, and you could get something, at least have a discussion about getting on the agenda so you could have notice for like a presentation. Or call the mayor like you did my good friend Steve Martin up there. Apparently you had a contact with him and he got you on the agenda. You know,
so are you saying tomorrow I can pick up the phone and call the city clerk and request to be put on the calendar?
Well, we can work on that tonight. It's
okay,
just that
great.
We could have had, it would have been nice if we had it on the agenda tonight. We'll move on.
Okay.
Thank you, sir.
So, in other words, are we going to discuss that further?
We can't discuss that at this point. So I do need to close our public comment. I apologize, but we are very limited on what we can do when it's an item that's not agendized. So I apologize for that. But that is the rules we're under. But I will do what I can do to follow up. And if you have any questions, I'd be happy to meet with you up in Paso, talk with the city clerk on procedures. You can talk to me anytime, but we'll try to rectify that. But enough said. We wish we could have
worked it out. Thank
you very
much for allowing me to come back up here.
Yeah.
I'll give you a call in the morning. How's that sound?
That would be fine.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
Anyway, we've got public comment closed. We appreciate your input. I think a lot of the students had to go home already. All I can do is report on where we've been so far with Integrated Waste Management Authority. I can't really have a discussion with council members on a topic that's not agendized. I trust you understand that. So this has been a topic we've had at our Integrated Waste Management Authority. I think when the folks first came up, I often go back to the story of when I was a young person once myself, economics major at UCSB, specializing in environmental and natural resource economics, dealt a lot with some of these issues. There were some concerns back then. I remember my first date with the woman I've been married to over 40 years. We're out at a bike campfire. She's got a styrofoam cup, drops it into the fire, and I proceeded to give her a long lecture, and amazingly, we still got married. And been happily married for over 40 years. But It's certainly been an issue. I would certainly agree with all the comments that have been said. There's hard to think of any good reason for styrofoam to exist. You know, I think that's a given. The issue is, in basically, recycling in California is broken. There's a lot of problems that not only we are trying to address, but IWMA, Integrated Waste Management, is trying to adjust. And we have a lot of issues with, you know, landfills. This is something we have on our agenda every time at Integrated Waste Management Authority. I was hoping that it would be something addressed at a state level, because I'm very much in agreement with the concerns raised, but from a policy standpoint, it's always better at a higher jurisdiction, because then there's uniformity. Even though we have five city councils that have adopted an ordinance, they're all a little bit different.
Excuse me, Mr. Mayor. At this point, what you might want to do is, since you're at this portion of your agenda where it's going to be reports by council members, I had understood that you were going to summarize what had occurred at a meeting that you had attended.
And so I will try to do that. And part of the discussion at our last Integrated Waste Management Authority meeting was the fact that California did not pass a law that applied statewide. And so Supervisor Gibson brought up the question about revisiting it at IWMA, and I supported that. So it's going to be agendized, because we do recognize that we'd like to see some uniformity. I think most folks agree it's a problem. The issue is, from a policy standpoint, how do you approach that? So I also think there's some value if PASO is moving ahead. Well, I have to hold back and only talk about a meeting that's already occurred. That's part of the problem of talking about something that's not on the agenda. But I think that we will work through at the county level a policy that'll apply countywide, and that will align all of the city's ordinances, and we will follow suit. I would like to see, I would recommend to staff, if I may, Mr. City Attorney.
Well, it depends on how you finish that sentence.
It's very tough process. I think, given that we're going to be discussing this at IWMA, and we often partner with PASO on policy issues, if PASO, the remaining city that has not looked at an ordinance, is going to consider something, our staff work with them in parallel so that we have a parallel recommendation either to IWMA or back to our councils. And I don't see any downside to that. Is that something that staff could do in terms of working with PASO Robles if I suggested that?
Well, my suggestion would be that if you want to have a discussion with the other council members about that direction to staff, is that you could set this for a future agenda item, have it discussed amongst the council as to what direction it is that is appropriate, and then you could, you know, give direction to staff at that point. You do have some latitude with respect to giving direction to staff, but the only problem is that this issue that we're talking about is not on the agenda.
Right.
So to give direction to staff or make recommendations isn't something that the general public knew was going to happen tonight. So I do think that if you wanted to expand this discussion, then
let me make another suggestion then. Because it's every council member here is dying to interact, and we can't do that because of Brown Act requirements and because it's not on the agenda. And so I would suggest, if there's council consensus, we go ahead and agendize this item so we can have some discussion. It's going to be coming back. Folks are going to be wanting to talk about it. And we just kind of, okay, this was practice. Let's help folks be noticed that we're going to talk about that an item could be coming for IWMA. We may want to consider it as a city, but we just have this discussion, and I suggest we go ahead and do that. We are in a position where it's really yay or nay.
You can, as a council, agree to have this item put on a future agenda. So and as a matter of fact, I think, do we allow, I don't recall, under our norms that an individual council member or the mayor can request that? So I don't even know that you need the
entire council. Well, the mayor can call a special meeting, but that's,
We can have an individual council member put something on the agenda under council determinations, and that would not include any staff report or anything, but it would be agendized for discussion.
So that is definitely an option. Or another option would be that as a council, you can, under the Brown Act, give direction to staff to bring this item back as a item that you want to report on. So it's either.
Let me ask this. If I were to include it as a item under my name on as an agenda item, would you be able to have a public presentation if folks wanted to do the presentation that was done in Paso, for example?
Well, I think under the way your agendas read, the language under council reports is that that's your opportunity to for you to do the report. Like we've got. Yeah, I do. The city manager is reminding me that we do have another section of the agenda called individual determination and/or action. So
let me make another suggestion for the city manager to consider: could we invite folks that were here to simply agendize the presentation that was done in Paso? So it's just a presentation at the beginning of the meeting, and then we could then have an agenda item at the end under a council member where it doesn't require staff research, but then we could have a public discussion because it's agendized.
Well, if you want to hear from me on that, I think part of the concern there would be, as you saw tonight, is that it's getting later in the evening now, and if these are high school students that are some of those that are going to be here. So if they're going to do a presentation at 6:15 or 6:30, for them to wait until 8:30 or 9 while you then have your conversation about it, they may not be here. So it might be better to have, and we can certainly adjust the order of the agenda. You have that authority. The Brown Act doesn't specify what goes where on the agenda. It just says that you have an agenda of the items that are going to be discussed, and you have the latitude of putting what you want on the agenda in different locations. I mean, we do that frequently where items will be moved around on the agenda.
Right.
So if you wish to have a discussion about this item, and there's also nothing in the Brown Act that requires a staff report to be prepared.
Right.
Only that there be a description of what the item is that's going to be discussed, and further that if there's going to be an action, if it could either be a receive and file, a discussion item, or an action item, and so whatever description's in the agenda will have to identify what it's going to be. But that could all be on the front end of the council. It doesn't have to wait till the end just because that's where traditionally you have it in your agenda.
Well, I'm really jealous of Paso that I got to have it on the agenda. It's unfortunate. This would have been a perfect night for this discussion because we didn't have much else on the agenda. And I know we've got some other things coming up. So we really... Oops.
What happened in Paso was this.
Okay, I'm going to allow. What I have to do, sir, is I have to open up the public forum briefly for a comment. We really can't have a lot of dialogue. I'm sorry for this situation, but we want to try to follow our rules and allow you to have this opportunity. Yeah. So I think this is just a procedural issue for us, and I think I would suggest working with the city attorney, we just try to resolve this issue and get it agendized. And normally folks would contact the city ahead of time and get something agendized, and then we wouldn't have the situation we're in where council members would really like to have discussion. We really can't have that. So I would go back to suggest we agendize this at a future meeting and go ahead and request that this council receive the same presentation that Paso Robles City Council heard, and then we will deal with that. And it'll be an agendized item so that we can respond. I don't know. I would suggest that you don't need to do any more staff work than Paso Robles City Council did.
And then did you want it as a discussion item?
It would be agendized so that we could have discussion and take action to give some direction.
Okay, so the action piece would be give direction to staff.
Okay. Is there... let me see if there's consensus by our council to do that. Otherwise, then we can't have much discussion.
I think if we're going to discuss it, anybody should be able to come and make their presentation, not just Paso Robles. It can be Tascadero High School. It can be anybody, business owner. I don't like this restriction. I don't want to play the game. Either put it on the agenda or don't do it at all.
Well, then that would even broaden it more. The suggestion is we just agendize it, and it's publicly noticed. We just hear from everyone on this topic.
I would like to see it agendized for discussion, and then we give staff some guidance on where we'd like to go from there.
Yeah.
We need to be clear about this, because originally we were saying, oh, this presentation of 10 minutes, and then Councilmember Fonzi says we want everybody to present, so we're not having everybody get up giving 5, 10, 15, 20-minute presentations. We're going to agendize this, have a discussion, public comment of the normal 3-minute, you know, and with sometimes the mayor gives latitude, but is that what we're talking about? I mean, I want this to be clear for those that are wanting to share information. And it could be that you have, you know, five of you get up and you've got 3 minutes and it's 15 total and here's your 3 minutes and it does something like that, and they can be creative that way.
I agree with what you're saying, that you give everybody, each person 3 minutes, and if they want to string together a 12-minute presentation, then we just like we would have to listen to any number of people discuss a given subject. We will sit here and listen to people discuss that subject in 3-minute increments.
And I think we could ask Bill Worrell from IWMA to maybe give a little overview of what other cities have done, if we want, and what IWMA is expecting to do. And I would like to just let folks from the public know that if they notify the city ahead of time, for example, if they have something that would need to be displayed, that could occur. Maybe. Let me, we can't really have a discussion with the audience because it's, thank you. Any discussion we have needs to occur through the mic so that everyone can hear that. So I think we're still trying to work towards, I think we're going to have to deal with this topic.
I'm hearing is you'd like to have it agendized for discussion. We will go through the normal comment period. You're not looking for a staff report or other things. If we could contact Bill Worrell or others to see if they might be available. I would recommend that it not be on the next council agenda because that you have La Plaza and a couple of other big items, so you probably will have a crowd and a late night anyway. But we could possibly look at the second meeting in April to have it on the agenda.
Yeah, I'd say the
and
first...
And I'll work with the city attorney to make that happen.
I think the first agenda that doesn't have major issues on that could be first thing addressed so we could allow student participation. That's probably the best thing to do. Okay, are we kind of on consensus? I know it's a tough one because we really couldn't have the discussion we would like. Are we okay with our process? Do we want to hear any more input? Or I can hear input offline, I think, from all I can meet with folks afterwards and look at how we can accommodate. I think we're okay.
I want to hear a lot of discussion. So, whether it's two different sides, that's all good. You know, we need to hear from the public in every format. And so I'm just wanting to make sure that I'm not hearing you limit the discussion to only the Paso Robles group.
And
if
I don't really
do it right.
No, I mean, I don't really want to characterize it as a Paso Robles group.
Okay.
I'm just characterizing it as Paso Robles City Council heard a presentation. I'd like that to be available to us. And if other people have something similar, if they would check with the city clerk ahead of time. I would ask for discretion between the city clerk and I to kind of manage that meeting and have some limits. Certainly, half hour of input is probably the maximum.
If we have 10 people that want to give up their 3 minutes, then they can have their 30-minute slot. I get it.
I think we could ask folks to consolidate their input and still hear from everybody and then have opportunity to give some direction. And we'll just do a reset. This is, like I say, kind of practice. It's unfortunate we couldn't have a broader discussion, but we can have it, it sounds like, in April.
Perfect.
And I will hang out and talk with folks after this meeting with the city clerk, and we can kind of work through whatever didn't happen before. We'll make sure it happens this time, and we will have a meeting where everyone can have their input, and then we can also we can join you in the discussion. We aren't really able to do that tonight, and I apologize for that, but our city attorney would turn me into a pumpkin or something, maybe styrofoam even. Okay. I think that is what we can do with that topic tonight. Are we satisfied? And as Mr. City Attorney, I will talk with you after the meeting.
Okay, but I just would like a clarification.
Yeah, well, we'll talk. We'll work with the city clerk so you understand the process to get things on the agenda for the future. I think then, I certainly don't have anything else to report on my list of items. Does any other council member want to report on any item?
Yes, I have one, and this is not regarding committee reports. This is council announcements and reports. I think we all received an email from someone who lives on Santa Isabel regarding RV parking. If you happen to go down that street this evening, I would urge you to do so. There is an RV that has been parked there for many weeks. It has been red tagged, I noticed. Thank you, Chief. And this is not the only place. In residential neighborhoods, we are seeing more and more RV parking. In multifamily in particular, this is a problem because parking is at a premium. And I think at some point in the very near future, we need to bring this forward and talk about banning RV parking on our public streets in residential zones. At least in the multifamily and perhaps in other portions of town, most people can park them in their yard, and they do. I have no problem with that. I'm not sure if this could be handled in the camping ordinance for homeless. They're not always used for camping. Sometimes they're just on the street, but yet it is something used for camping, like a tent. We don't allow tents on the sidewalk to stay either. So I'm not sure how to go with this. I see it as a continuing problem, and it is beginning to grow, and I'd like it to come back at a future time if the council is in favor of doing so.
So I would check with city manager what might be an appropriate topic that might fit into. I would certainly support some future discussion.
Thank you.
And I think we, if there's consensus, we can leave it to the city manager. So that one, for the record, you know, we'll ask the city manager to see where that might fit for a future meeting. Any other? Go ahead, Councilwoman Moreno.
So I was listening to Sheriff Parkinson earlier today, was talking about what we've been doing countywide in terms of school safety, and especially if there is an active shooter type situation. And so I wanted to ask, I'm sure that the chief is probably familiar with that, maybe at some point come back and just kind of give us an update on what we are doing countywide. He was talking about a license for 3,200 apps that are throughout the county. So, you know, people, if there is a situation like that, can simply press a button, their location is identified, it goes out to others, and I think we're the first county, possibly in California, to be using that. So I think it would be really good for our public to hear what we're doing countywide in terms of school safety, if we could have something like that come to us. Is that okay with everyone? Okay.
Very good.
Thank you.
Any other input from council?
I just want to mention I went to the reality tour last night, and thank you to the chief and the police department and the Lighthouse Foundation for putting that together to educate parents and children regarding drug abuse. It was a good event.
Another one? Councilman
Moreno? I
forgot
to mention Dancing with Our Stars. So we had... So the chief and I both danced. It was a lot of fun. But overall, just votes for the 7 nonprofits, $98,000 was raised for all those organizations. So that was pretty exciting. And the grand champion was Brenda May from Quota Club. Brenda May with her choreographer, Brian Reeves. And they also won People's Choice that night. So that was pretty exciting for Quota. And then I think second place was the Historical Society, Jim Wilkins.
Nice.
And then third place was Jennifer Adams with Rise. So pretty exciting event.
Well, I can mention briefly, Mayor Martin and I did co-author a letter really thanking Assemblyman Cunningham and Senator Monning for their work on securing really more funding than we've ever seen in our county for Highway 46. As you know, we've been very proactive trying to address the unmet needs, and so we do appreciate their support. And I will say, since we're a little bit on environmental issues, it continues to be a major challenge where we are working directly with Senator Monning and Jordan Cunningham about the issue of recycling. It really has failed. As you may know, we all go into the store and we get a Coke can, an aluminum can, or a glass bottle. Often they have a 5-cent fee attached to them. You pay that money. That money gets sent to the state. When you go back to try to get your money for that, the store doesn't get reimbursed. They are actually legally required to pay you money back, but they don't get reimbursed. So imagine the impact on a little mom and pop grocery store in that scenario. And there is a fine if they don't do that. So it's very much that has been waived by the state recently, but it has to do a lot with issues with recycling and the value of recycled materials, you know, internationally. And it's a major issue on that. So, of course, there's nothing to do with styrofoam, but we're having a heck of a time recycling glass and aluminum. Now, that is a real problem, and it's having an impact. So we are really working on that issue at the state level. I think with that, I think we could adjourn from the council standpoint. Anything from the staff?
You didn't ask for committee reports.
If you would like to give any committee reports, this would be the time.
Well, Mayor Pro Tem Fonzie and I will be participating in the design review committee tomorrow. And there's two items on the agenda. If anybody's interested, design review of the Colony Heritage Center that the Atascadero Historical Society is putting together for the site up next to the library. And then also review of a multifamily conditional use permit at 8740 El Camino Real. So that will be on the agenda tomorrow afternoon at 2 o'clock if anybody's interested.
Very good. I guess I could briefly mention I was on the an interview panel for the new health agency director for the county. I was very pleased with the candidates we saw. and was participated with the county administrative officer that was on the panel I was on, and I can assure you every candidate well understood our county needs to figure out how to deal with mental illness in law enforcement settings and animal shelter issues. They all were prepared on those two topics, which are, have been big issues for us in the North County. And so I think we should be hearing something soon, because I know we had our interviews on Monday and the Board of Supervisors were interviewing that position today. So I think that'll help things get moving forward here. And we do have an ad hoc committee of our animal shelter. Roberta Fonzi and I will be meeting with county supervisors and the CAO, and hopefully, I think, get some resolution there. And hopefully we will have something to bring back to the council and agendize out of that meeting. So we'll keep you, at least they're moving forward at the county level. I think with that, no other comment, we will adjourn, and I will spend some time with members here to just understand our process. Thank you.